matter of a moment lost till the end of time. It's the evening of another day and the end of mine. Starlight, which has found me lost for a million years, tries to linger as it fills my eyes till it disappears.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 9th, 2015. Tonight's open forum is being simulcast over four networks, so you can find more information on our weekly call page at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on the call, weekly call on the top left for more information. We're being rebroadcasted or simulcast by Shake and Wake Radio, GMN Broadcasting, Classic Redneck Radio, and Blog Talk Radio Anti-New World Order Party. If anyone would like to email any questions, you can send questions to questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. And we'll get those emails, and we'll answer those questions in the following week. all radio hosts are invited, if they have any questions or any comments, into the queue as any other caller. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. If you're listening over any of these networks and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. That's 605-562-3140. And the participant code is 385-698. Again, that's 385-698. Okay, for other ways to join us, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call on the top left side, and you can also call through our browser if you don't want to call in by phone. And of course, you can call in by pretty much any phone. Cell phones could be difficult to listen in this long, very long on them. Please support our sponsors, of which the proceeds is support National Liberty Alliance's efforts. We have a couple of sponsors. We have Numana. Numana is a delicious non-GMO long-term storage food. I believe it's over 20 years. It can last. They come individually. Each meal comes individually packaged and sealed, and it comes in a container, a can. You can be prepared by buying 1 month of grab-and-go for $149. So it's enough food to last someone for a month. I'm not sure. I have to check into this, whether that's a family or just one person. But in any event, you could buy larger packages. And most people, you know, it's difficult to afford to buy this kind of food. But if you purchase a can a month or something of that nature, at least you could start storing up. In 12 months, you can have a year's worth of food supply stored up. Eventually, there's no doubt we're going to need these kind of things, so we should be preparing. We also have East End Rare Coins, dealer of silver and gold. We finally got them up on our website. And both of these links you can find on our right-hand side of our website. And we should all be prepared by buying some silver dimes, quarters, half dollars, silver dollars. You know, you can buy a little every week, a little every month. It's real money. It's the best investment, in my opinion, anyone could make. Because when things get bad, at some point, things will get back to a little bit of normality, and you'll be able to trade silver for food and other necessities. But in any event, it's a great investment because right now is the best time to buy silver. So prices are super low. And of course, as time goes on, there's no doubt that's going to go up. It's, it certainly is not going to stay down there. So, and also, you can support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right. Okay, before we get started, before we even read the scriptures for the night, we do have, well, I'll tell you what, let us read the scriptures first, and then we have a special announcement. Eric, let me get Eric into the queue. Eric, I'm sure you're in here somewheres. I'm going to go into Q&A. Nobody get. Just Eric. Eric, get into the queue if you could. Eric, hit star 6. Okay, meanwhile, while looking for Eric, let's read tonight's scripture. We're looking at James chapter 5. And we read, "From whence comes wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask and ye receive not, because you ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lusts. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is an enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be friends of the world is the enemy of God. Do you think that the scripture saith in vain, the spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth after to envy? But he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh unto you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted, and mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning, and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother, the law, speaketh evil of, let me reread that. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgeth another? Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or do that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is a sin. Okay, that was James chapter 5, verses 1 through 17. Okay, as I mentioned, we have a special announcement. Let me let Eric pick up the mic as soon as I can find to get into the queue. Go right ahead, Eric. You got the mic.
Thanks, John. Am I coming through okay?
You're coming through great.
I have good news and I have bad news, and I'm going to give the good news first. In the case of our NLA member, Mr. Lee, I think his first name is Brad. Robert may be able to comment better on this, our national coordinator, our new national coordinator, Robert, out of Oregon. In Seaside, Oregon, we were able to get cameras into the courtroom based on the two cases that we cite in our respectful command letter to the courts, respectfully commanding them to accept our cameras and our right to film, and we had success. The court had to accept the cameras and our right to film. Unfortunately, they arrested Mr. Lee, and he's incarcerated, and we're trying to get him out as we speak, so we might be able to get a habeas corpus for him and see if we can get him assistance on that. He is disabled, and it's a bizarre situation where they're not disclosing the charges. They just arrested him. And it looks like it might be reprisal for his involvement in the freedom movement, so to speak, and with the NLA. So it's very difficult to get information right now, and I'm working on that. The second bit of bad news is we have kind of a correction from last week. I got a phone call today from, last week we brought forward Pro Se America, which was Janice, who is leading a march in Washington, D.C., and was willing to pass out our Quo Wanto at the Supreme Court building where she planned on making a stop for her march. And in return, we'd give her some publicity and some traction and some postings and some spots, you know, some places on our, maybe on our website to give her, you know, publicity for her march. And I got a call today saying that she was not willing to deliver the documents personally herself. She would be willing to stand out front and announce it if we want to find somebody else to run up the stairs and take them to the court. So, and apparently she's going to be in the building because she's already got her permits from the Supreme Court police force. But she's not. She says the march is becoming so big that she's going to be too busy with that, and she can't do it herself. Now, she did offer if we want to find somebody else, she'd stand out front and announce it. But we came to the decision that that would not have the same impact as the leader of the march delivering the document herself, which... And by the way, that was the original deal. So unfortunately, we have to kind of retract our any type of heavy involvement with the march with Pro Se America. And they're going to do their thing. God bless them. And we're going to do our thing. God bless us. And I would suggest two things. When anybody in our group, so to speak, the National Liberty Alliance, encounters somebody from another group or part of the movement, so to speak, ask them the following question: where's your plan for the fix? And most of them don't have one. They have a lot of stuff going on. There's going to be a movie that they're going to run, and they're going to have a consortium at one of the buildings in DuPont Circle, and they're going to be out at the Cato Institute having some event there, and there's going to be a lot of events and stuff and marching, but where's the plan for the fix? And the only place where I have seen a plan for the fix is the National Liberty Alliance. So once again, unfortunately, I got the call today that she wouldn't do it herself, and so we're going to do our thing, she's going to do hers, and let's move forward from there. And the once again, the good news is that our letter of respectful command for the court to honor and enforce our right to film was honored in Oregon by the court because they were stuck with those two court cases that we have listed on the Courtroom Observer protocols bulletin board. So, you know, we do have positive news out there. We do have a little bit of negative news, but everybody's doing their thing. We need to focus on National Liberty Alliance work. And I don't let this jade me. I still reach out my hand and offer, you know, assistance and networking with other groups. But when they're not willing to step up to the plate and honor their original agreement, we got to cut them loose. And I think time to be, you know, for platitudes and niceties is over. You know, we were lied to and we were used last week for traction for the for a little publicity for the march, and she changed the deal.
Yeah, there was one other thing, I think, Eric. I don't know if anything has changed in this, but there was a connection with another group of people that is contrary to our thinking that was involved. Has that changed?
Yeah.
There were people who were supporting that move and has brought a lot of people to the play,
yeah,
to the game. This is the major reason. Before you go, hang on a second. This is the major reason why we decided to cut, because of principles. I mean, we cannot, you know, if we find people, you know, like we found, for instance, Eric with the Courtroom Observers Group, we knew that was a perfect match for National Liberty Alliance, that he could grow here and we can grow with him, and we have the same agenda, the same focus in the courtrooms. We thought we had this with this group. But unfortunately, you know, one of the problems, they did use the word pro se, which I didn't have a big problem of, because as long as they realize, and they should put notes on their footnotes on their papers where it says pro se, to let it know that they're coming in person. And it's called in pro per, and that's fine. But anyway, we thought we had something that we could grow and maybe get a group growing within us and work with them, as long as our motives and focus and goals were the same. But now with these other groups entering in, nothing could be further from the truth. Not that we're going to mention the names of these groups. We don't want to do that.
Or names of people or anything.
But we obviously cannot be connected. You know, light and darkness cannot walk together. We have to be on the same page. But go ahead, finish up, Eric.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, and it did. I'm not going to be extremely specific because I don't want to lose my sources, but
yeah, not
my,
at all.
My further investigation into what's going on with Pro Se America and this march in D.C. on Law Day is, let's just say that Pro Se America is forming some very unholy alliances with other forces, and it may be intentional or very unintentional and unknowing, but it's what's going on, and so I'll just leave it at that, and I encourage people to stay focused on the NLA. We have the plan. We have the fix. Nobody else does. Everywhere I turn, it's complain, march, protest, bitch, moan, wall of shame, and I don't see a plan. So, you know, I would really encourage, you know, people from these other movements, and they have, I must say, Operation American Spring has come together with the National Liberty Alliance, and many other groups like the Courtroom Observers have also joined with the National Liberty Alliance. But we all got to really be on the same page and pay attention to who our groups are networking with in their time, and support the people who, like you said, John, match our cause, and that will only make a more positive situation for all of us.
Hey, Eric, I got a question.
Yes, sir.
This is Gerard. How you doing?
Hey, Gerard.
Was Mr. Lee arrested in the court and on tape, or no? Or did this happen later?
I didn't get that. Robert, are you out there?
Well, Robert would have to be unmuted, so I don't know.
Gerard, I don't know the answer. I do not know
we
the
should,
answer
we
to
should
that
give,
question.
We should give Robert access into the board. I don't know why I haven't done that yet. Gary, maybe you should make sure that happens.
Well, let me tell you, if he was arrested in court,
I got the impression that he was arrested in the court or just after the proceedings, and he was about to leave is what the impression I got was. But Robert has the details, and although we did get the cameras in the court, I'm not sure if they caught that or not. I think they wait. It sounded to me like they waited till everything broke down and people were leaving or had left.
That's too bad, because that would be very, very powerful.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That would go viral. They would have a hard time standing up to that, especially if they didn't want to tell them what the charges were.
Well, Gerard, they're not revealing the charges of why they arrested them, apparently. And I'm going to start making some calls tomorrow. So hopefully, Robert, if you're out there, let's get him in on this matter. And if he can get me, I think I already asked him today in our earlier call. I spoke to him a few hours ago.
Okay, when they arrest you and they don't tell you the charge, that is nothing more than the Patriot Act. They have to tell you the charge.
I know. It's absurd.
And if they're not telling you the charge, then they're operating under that martial law, whatever. I don't know what you want to call it, the Patriot Act, that illegal act. So what we have to do is any officer that would arrest somebody under that law and any judge that would do it, guess what? Those are indictable offenses. They should know that we are watching, and those things will become evidence in their trials. Anyway, I'm going to yield.
I got the impression it was the police and not the bailiffs of the court, and that was a little confusing to me. So I think they're really pulling some shenanigans there, and a very bad. It's not good, and so I think we should all follow up on this. And if people can,
let me suggest that if the Oregon leaders get together and they want to use the unified common law. Grand Jury of Oregon, the Oregon Unified Common Law Grand Jury. If they wanted to do that, we'd write all the necessary papers. All we need to do is get the facts. And it's a handshake paperwork, by the way, because the papers has to be requested by the individual, and a best friend or next friend, which is called in the federal courts, can do that. And this should probably go into the federal court. I presume this was a state court, or was it a town? It wasn't a town court, was it?
This was a county court out in Seaside,
okay.
Oregon.
This needs to go into the federal court, okay? If Oregon talks with me directly, we'll work out a plan. But it's a handshake paperwork where the individual who was arrested writes the papers and requests, a habeas corpus, and they have to, then the next friend does that for them. And we can grant it from the Oregon Common Law Grand Jury. We can grant that and push it towards show cause. And therefore, the other side needs to come up with a show cause.
I'm glad we can do that because this is an egregious case. The guy is disabled.
Eric,
he's not hurting
Eric,
anybody, and it's obviously a reprisal.
Eric, hang on until I'm done, okay? So, because this is not just telling what we can do so we can go forward with it. Of course, we need to do that, but this is also educational. People need to know the process and how things work, and that's what I'm trying to explain. And so what happens is then the habeas corpus is actually a show cause. The other side has got to show cause. They have to show all their proof on why he was arrested. They have to produce witnesses, and there has to come an affidavit. And if someone doesn't come up with an affidavit on why this individual is in jail, by what authority and under what authority they're in jail, and especially there's been no indictment, he has nothing to answer for. But we need to get the facts of the case, exactly what happens, and we need to get affidavits in order to respond off of this and to help Oregon to do this. So Oregon needs to look into this and make a discovery on this and then get to us and work it out. But now go ahead, finish off what you were saying about this guy that got arrested.
Yeah, I think we should do this through Robert because he has more details than I do on this, and so he's the man to talk to. Also, let's include Washington State because apparently Seaside's only, I think he said it's only, half hour, 45 minutes from the Washington border. So if we can get help from people in Washington State as well, that would be greatly appreciated, at least as far as courtroom observers, et cetera.
Right. They should fill on the day of the hearing where the body must be delivered by law. We should be in the courts with cameras, notifications of those cameras beforehand. That will put pressure on the judge to make sure that it's called in. We have to do it into a federal court. We'll have to get into those details, and then we can expound on that. Now, look at this is still when you do a quo warranto, for instance, If we were in actually working out of the courts and the administrators were in the process of, bringing together the grand juries and the trial juries as necessary, and people come with problems, we try to deal with the problems, and if we can't deal with the problems, and we can then pass them on to the grand jury. Well, this would be a problem for the administrators. This is not necessarily a problem for the grand jury per se directly, but it would be for the administrators, who are the investigative body for the grand jury, and therefore can write in the name of the grand jury, for the sole purpose of investigating. And a show cause is an investigation. A habeas corpus is an investigation. A habeas corpus is a show cause why you're holding this body. Tell us why.
Right.
And so we can do this without having to go to pull together 25 people and to go. We just need a small core group willing to go forward, the people who are in charge, so to speak, on the state level and have the seal and are willing to go forward with it. Then you let us know.
Yep.
We'll work with it. And we'll get it done very quickly. We've already got all the framework of this kind of a thing completed. We can put it together in a day.
Yeah, like we said, we don't need all that many people yet. We just need a small core of quality is better than quantity right now, but we'll take both. And one last thing, the Numana food is awesome. Daniel at Numana sent me a sample pack, and it's the stuff is really good. So if people go to NLAReady.com, that's NLA Ready, they'll get some of the best food they've ever tasted. It does store for 25 or more years, which is an incredibly long time. And if they mark it 25, that usually means it could go almost twice that long. But I tried it. It's incredible. It tastes great. It's really filling, and you just add hot water to most of them, and it's really good stuff. I was blown away by how good it is. So I wanted to give that plug for Daniel because he put a lot of work into this, hooking up that website on his own time and actually putting our specific page together for that product. And he did that for us at his own expense, and he's giving us a great deal there. And his stuff is great. So if people, and you can eat it on a daily basis. You don't just have to buy it at the store. I've been consuming it regularly for the past few days, and it's incredible. So I highly recommend it. We're going to have a link up on the website. Either we do now or we're going to soon,
done.
Right, John?
It's up there right now. There's a link on the right-hand side, and right underneath there is the East End Rare Coins. There's a few items that everybody needs to have. Obviously, ammunition is one of them. But food and real money, people need it. And it's not going to go to waste because, let's say, worst comes to worst, best comes to best. We don't have a collapse of that type.
Right.
Let me say worst comes to
eat
worst.
Your
best
food.
Comes to best.
Eat
your food, right. And you look at, if best comes to best, we'll have real money, and you'll already have a leg up on that, and you could buy it a lot cheaper today than you will then because money is going to have a heavy, heavy value. You know, look at, in a totally collapsed society, one silver dollar will feed a small family of four for a week. So look at that huge amount of money, and right now you can buy a silver dollar for about $16.
Let me back that up, and then I'll close out and turn it back over to you to back up what you just said about this silver dollar. You know, at times buying enough food to feed a whole family for a day or more. There was a time back in the 1980s when the Hunt brothers tried to corner the market on silver. The price went up to $50 an ounce. This was decades ago when $50 an ounce for silver was really high. They failed in their attempt to do it ultimately. But at that time, for that short period of time, which was a few days or a week, that silver went up to $50, you were able to go out and for a dime buy a full meal, full course meal out at local restaurants, and restaurants were taking the silver. So it just goes to show you that times can go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let me correct what I said. An ounce of silver is about $16. A silver dollar, okay, is about roughly around $14. I think it's 13 and change now, 13.6. It moves all the time, and now is the time to buy it. And me personally, I like junk silver best. They call it junk silver. I don't know why they call it junk silver, but they call it junk silver, and that is your dimes, your quarters, your half dollars, and your silver dollars. That's real money. That's already out there, and everybody understands it. Okay, are we done, Eric?
We're done. Thank you so much, John. I'll kick back and call me back if you need me.
Okay. All right, before we get into tonight's subject matter, Gerard, do you have anything particular? If we found Robert, Gary, have we been able to find Robert to unmute him if he has anything to say? Maybe you can look for that. But Gerard, do you have anything?
I don't have anything, and I don't see Robert there, so I don't know.
Okay, Sheila and Robert, if you want to say anything, get into the queue. I'm going to clear the queue.
Well, John, okay, before we go on too far, I did want to talk about Don Levine's case.
Okay.
That he had done a court watcher request, and though court watchers ended up not being needed as badly as they usually are in most cases, and Don Levine actually schooled the plaintiff's attorney in a Fair Debt Collections and Practices Act lawsuit. I think we might have a case. Example, if we can talk Don into sharing the information, which I believe we can, for people that are victims of fair debt and collections and practices. But Don had a very incredibly, apparently successful case. It's federal court, so he's not going to know what the results are until the judge rules. But the judge complimented him. Even the plaintiff's attorney complimented him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. Well, yeah, you can bring that up after we move into Q&A. We can get into those details. But right now, all we're looking for is if Robert wants to pipe in on that case in on Oregon right now, or if Sheila or anything else that's important that he wants to share with us, or Sheila, if she has anything. Gary, do you have anything else?
Nothing else.
Okay, I got a 570. I know it's not Sheila. Is that you, Robert? 570, is that you, Robert?
No, it is not. It is
okay,
Stephen.
I'm going to clear out of the
ask a question?
Yeah, when we get into Q&A. Right now, we got a process.
It was just regarding the last. It was just regarding the last issue that we're. I had my. My queue up, and you canceled my queue, and I didn't get a chance to speak. I was wondering about the. Is tonight's call supposed to be for fundraising matters?
Not particularly, no. But you can come into the queue after we when we move to Q&A. Okay, we're not in Q&A right now. Right now it's just leaders reporting and going through to tell us what's going on. Okay? So we appreciate it. So let me go. I see Sheila's in here now. So Sheila, go right ahead.
Hi,
by the way, I would like to say, while I got you there, Sheila, you know, on getting the word out, okay? I think if we can come up with something, like if we can come up with something that's very, very brief that says, you know, talks about the solution, some sentence that asks these people the question, what is the solution? Have you found a solution? Or and here lies the solution, or something of that nature, something short, because it is key. I was at a Liberty Group meeting this week, over the weekend, and I was trying to get the point across. They're not primed for it. They're not really. They kind of know they need a solution, but they don't have one. And that is the question. You know, whatever it is that you're doing in a Liberty Group, do you have a solution? What is the plan? Where are you trying to get to? You know, I made the point at the meeting that look, we've been at this for 7-8 years here in this county. And we've been taken, you know, through the mill here with all of these people running for office. We haven't accomplished anything. We might have gotten one or two good people in, and usually they start to go sour too, and they don't get anything done. So, and just think about it. So you get someone in office, you think you accomplished something. Just think how many positions in office in every state, every county, every city, every town, and then you get into the federal level. I mean, it's thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So everybody in every county and every town's got to be working on this, and that's not happening. So what is the answer? What is the solution? That's the question. And then the answer should be pointing back to NLA. So that's some kind of an idea, maybe some kind of a campaign you can go get going with on that, maybe very small, mm-hmm. one or two liner, pique the interest, mm-hmm. get them to come look. But go ahead, Sheila.
Okay. Yeah, I got you, John. Yeah, hi, everyone. I just want to invite everyone over to the media. Well, it's actually groups. It's under groups. And you can click on any of the forums.
Media campaign,
and you can,
I think, right?
Yeah, it's media campaign,
it
but
right.
Under the tab,
under groups.
It's groups.
Right.
Yes, it's under groups. So, it's a lot of ideas up. We are really gung-ho on this 1 million signatures right now. We are, sharing different avenues as to help the members to gain signatures. Eric and I are working on a sort of small committee, if you will, with this 1 million signature campaign. And, you know, we are sharing different ideas, like people go to gun shops, hardware stores, things of that nature, just to give you a sort of foundation to where you could gather these signatures, because 1 million signatures means 1 million bodies that are aware and becoming educated through National Liberty Alliance. So we have that going, and of course, John, I'm waiting on the page from Brian, and I will be able to share some of the projects that the members have put together and anxiously waiting to be shared. We have videos galore, quick videos created by
You're on Skype right now, aren't you, Sheila? You have Skype.
No, I'm not on Skype. I'm on my landline.
No, I understand I don't mean physically, but do you have Skype?
Yes, I do.
Okay, why don't you start putting these files onto Skype, because I can get the mm-hmm. files up, and then we'll try to get Brian again tomorrow. Give me a call. You know, we thought we had it fixed, and we don't. I left him a message on Friday that it's still not fixed, and I haven't heard back from him yet, so we'll push him tomorrow. But get me the files meanwhile. I'll upload them. You know, but you have
don't
email them to me. Probably some of them are too big. Just put them exactly the way you want them and throw them into my Skype. I'll upload them, and then we'll take it from there. If you want to write something, let me know what you want to write on the page just to get it started until we can get you access. Mm-hmm. But we'll discuss the details of that later.
We can talk tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah, we can talk tomorrow. What would be a good time around, real quick?
I don't know, about 10.
Well,
let me see. Right. I have my daughter has an appointment tomorrow in the afternoon, so yeah, maybe 10 o'clock is probably good.
Okay, real good. Well, that's about it. We just want to encourage members to please, if you cannot come to the meeting, which is every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to share and help us get this word across the nation. We really need the support of the people, and we need to do all we can. But meanwhile, at your leisure, you can go up to the site, and you can get Twitter phrases. You can post your ideas. You can conversate with people. I do want to reiterate real quick, if I may, regarding the videos. Please, members, support the videos. Go start conversations under the video, because when people go to those videos and they see the members, you know, if it's low views and the members are not supporting it, then why should we? So we really need that to happen. So that's about it, John. You know, thank you for this time, and please feel free and welcome to come over and visit groups and join the courtroom observers. And we just have a lot going on, and we know you'll be real excited to know that we are progressing as quickly as we are. So that's about it, John, and I yield.
Okay. Thank you,
thank
Sheila.
Thank you. God bless.
You too. Thank you. All right, Dave from Oregon, are you calling in for Robert?
Yeah, John, how you doing?
Good.
Hey,
Go ahead.
Pardon me?
Are you calling in for Robert?
No, Robert Bristow and I talked on Wednesday, and it seems like there is a missing component to our Oregon leadership. And
hold on. Why don't you talk with Robert if you want to talk with me about it? We could talk privately about it. But if you have a question or a comment, come back in when we move into Q&A, because right now we're just talking to get the people to bring up people up to you know, the leaders of the different groups that are involved, and to bring people up to par, so to speak, on what's going on, what we're doing, where we're at, and what we need to do. All right, so let me clear the queue again. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go into lecture. Okay, we'll go back into Q&A right after our subject tonight. Our subject tonight is fundamental principles of law and also the King's Court. And so we have some papers. Actually, these are two different papers, and we were brought together. I know we did look into the King's Court a while back, but we're going to go through it and review it again. It is an extremely important subject. We also want to mark it on our downloads so that people will see them quickly by subject matter and be able to come back and listen to the whatever subjects it is that they're interested in. Because, again, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So we have to become educated. And the main thing is getting to the fundamentals, the principles of law. And so the following excerpts that I'm going to read, and if anybody wants a copy of this, go up to nationallibertyalliance.org. You can follow along with it. Nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on media. And right below the court postings, the court filings, right below that, you'll see some papers. And one of those papers is Principles of Law and the King's Court. Okay, so you can download them, follow along, or you can download them later and read them later. But everybody, you know, these things are written for the perfect purpose of edification. They're written for knowledge of how things work, how things should be, and how they are. Okay, the following is excerpts from The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters. And by the way, the guy that did this research is an attorney. I don't know that he still is. I doubt he is. But it's excellent, excellent research this guy did. Anyway, there are three, I'm just going to cover the basics, some of the information in this book. There are three fundamentals of principles of law and government which arises from scriptures that are foundational to the common law tradition. First, the only legitimate exercise of law and government is ministerial. Every public magistrate and officer holds his office, authority, and power at the pleasure of God, to whom the public official is responsible and to whom he will ultimately answer for the conduct of his office. And this is the foundation of America. Second, God alone is Lord of the individual conscience, each person from the private individual serving as juror to the public magistrate and officer is responsible before God, to rightly inform his conscience and exercise independent judgment in determining his convictions and actions. His duty of independence discerning in judgment is non-delegatable. Third, when the individual ultimately answers to God for his actions, God will not permit him to take refuge in his obedience to or conformity with the judgment of any other mortal or combination thereof, regardless of their threats, demonstrations of power, or claim to infallibility. The individual's only real legitimate refuge and safe harbor is in true obedience to God in response to a conscience rightly informed, which is only possible as the product of faith in God in response to the scriptures. The common law tradition is in harmony with the foregoing three principles from scripture, which forms its foundation. Any doctrine said to be a part of the common law tradition that is inconsistent with these three is not part of the common law tradition. The civil law tradition remains irreconcilable with the foregoing three principles. Popular politics will erode the liberty of life and prosperity, property of individual Americans, if it is not preceded by founded upon a pervasive, experimental, and true knowledge of her courts, America's courts, and government in their common law function. Good government is right government, but right government will prevail only as individual founded on common law ideals, as these arise from the articulations of the court in response to real controversies. Though at times legislation may serve as a catalyst, reliable evidence of the law and good government emerges from individual cases and issues sharpened in the court, not through the broad and undiscerning brush of legislation. Our Constitution is not legislation, as civil law jurists understand the term, the product of superior reasoning of an elitist class. Rather, it is an expression of common law principles of government, the product of centuries of judicial struggles, thus its staying power, strength, and reliability. Through legislation, though legislation has its common law and constitutional use as the political feature of common law government, America can get along well with a minimum of legislation. because her ideals of law and government, however, arise from common law principles uncovered, refined, and articulated by the courts in tailored applications. Her ideals will fail without reliable and easily accessible courts. Unfortunately, Americans give a disproportionate time and attention to the promotion of legislation, but precious little time and attention to understanding and invoking our common law first principles. Experience shows that government centered on common law courts and juries encourage close participation and discourages lawlessness. Government centered on legislature and legislatures exclude close participation. Legislation, by its nature, must deny the minority opinion on the given issue. The tone of legislation is broad and commanding. The tone of the courts is narrow and discerning. Legislation decrees, courts of record make findings and render opinions. The ultimate statutory commands of a faceless state without the independent jury and courts are absolute, undiscerning, impersonal, and disheartening. Jury verdicts and reasonable courts' opinions tend to limit government, can be respectable and acceptable, leaving room for disagreement and lawful avenues for advancement of the individual conscience. The judicial power of the United States and of the several states lies only within the process of the common law. True authority and lasting national strength will not result from popular politics through the polarization of every American in disregard of the foundations of the common law tradition. Popular politics without the eternality and majesty of the law will ultimately disappoint and discourage, but the triumph of true law will satisfy and encourage. The strength, uniqueness, and aspiration of our common law government is not the will of popular politics, but rather the insistence upon right due process. In the common law tradition, the legislator champions popular politics as a check on executive power. The court champions the quest for true law as a check on executive power and legislative majorities. To place hope in the strong arm of the executive power or popular politics through the stroke of the legislative pen is to trust the government of a man or men in popular assembly. But to give attention to understanding and intelligent participation in a process of common law tradition when summoned as jurors, witnesses, or litigants is to insist upon a government of law. Consideration of executive power and legislative majorities and exclusion to the proven processes of the common law to affect discernment between good and evil, right and wrong, will result in tyranny. Rightly informed and intellectual experience with common law due process will provide the boldness necessary to assert common law limits for government that will enable liberty indeed. In common law, the common law is process-oriented, not result-oriented. Following the right process by asking the right questions can yield a right results via justice. Following the wrong process by asking the wrong question cannot yield the right results, because the process of the common law tradition are in agreement with the Holy Writ. Those equipped with conscience, rightly informed, with understanding of our common law tradition, will occupy and hold the territory of law and government and will affect liberty. The goal of the common law is to ensure due process with a view towards justice. The goal of the civil law is to ensure obedience to the state's will. Civil law begins by affirming legislation to be the true expression of justice. Common law begins by assuming truth's expression of justice is yet to be revealed and seeks to discover truth's just application by following the requirements of due process. Civil law courts venerate and the legislative code. Common law courts allow the adversity afforded by due process to test legislation's applications. While legislatures remain distant subjects of political winds, courts ought to be local subjects of law. Okay, and that brings us to the King's Bench. So law comes from God. That is the point. Ultimately, it comes from scriptures. That's the foundation of where common law comes from. We now get to the King's Bench. And the King's Bench is the authority of a court of record proceeding according to the common law under the authority of the people, also known as the tribunal. The Fifth Amendment demands a traditional common law grand jury, and every court is bound to obey the common law. A court of record proceeds according to the common law, whose tribunals are we, the people, functioning independently of that of the magistrate. No criminal trial shall proceed without the will of the people through the common law grand jury. When a judge deceives one of the people to make a plea without first an indictment, the said act would be criminal and does not give the judge authority to claim jurisdiction, and only courts of records can find and incarcerate. Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment by a grand jury, nor shall they be deprived of life, liberty, or property without their due process. Again, the Fifth Amendment. No criminal trial can proceed without the will of the people through a common law trial jury, wherein the judge do not have the authority to make a judgment. The Sixth Amendment, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury. Let me repeat that, an impartial jury, not a jury that is directed on how they're going to rule, an impartial jury. All they need to be informed and reminded of is the principles that they need to operate under. And to be informed of the nature and the cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witness against him. Matter of fact, that's a point that you can bring up with this case out in Oregon. If he doesn't know what the charges are, and the witness, he has a right to be confronted by them. And to have the assistance of counsel, that doesn't mean an attorney, for his defense. Sixth Amendment again. No judge has the authority to second-guess or overturn a decision by the people, in other words, the jury, and trial is according to the common law. Seventh Amendment. The right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any of the courts of the United States than according to the rules of common law, not the laws of chancery. The grand jury is, or the jury in itself as a whole, because grand jury, trial jury, they're the same thing. Grand jury starts the investigation to bring it into court and then passes it off to the trial jury that tries to figure out what's really going on and make a decision here. And there is no more right, I don't think, in the Bill of Rights that's spoken of more than the right of the jury, the people's jury. Judges are magistrates and not the tribunal. They possess no power to make a ruling or a judgment. This is Ex Parte Watkins, 3 Peter. Acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled or recorded for perpetual memory and testimony. Proceeds according to the course of the common law, has the power to fine or imprison for contempt, possesses a seal. Its judicial tribunal has attributes and exercise and functions independent of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it. He's just a traffic cop. The judicial executive branch have turned the New York State Supreme Court into a nisi prius court, not of record, thereby becoming a hybrid, and this is true on a federal level, combining a statutory and chancery court, both without the approval of the king, whereas the justice can never be served. The maxims. This maxim is applied by Lord Coke. He wrote quite a few maxims in terms of law, being understood in the sense of differences, inferiority, or qualifications. Thus, the style of the King's Bench is quorum regi, and the style of the Court of Chancery is quorum domino regi in chancellia. The additional showing the differences. Now, quorum regi means before the king himself. Statutory courts, or office of the courts, cannot second-guess the judgment of a court of record and are subject to collateral attack by the court of record, that is, the sovereign's court. The sovereign's court has the ability to go and bring into under judgment the court not of record. Ex parte Watkins, 3-peater again. The decisions, did we read this? Let me make sure it's not the same thing. I don't think it is. The decisions of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decisions of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resort to an appeal to other courts. Now, that is extremely important to understand. You don't have to, if you go into a court and you get beat up and they put all these things upon you, you don't have to go and appeal that. You go open your court of record, and you have the right and the authority to go after them directly. So let me reread that. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resort to an appeal on the appellate court. You make an appeal in their courts, you're back into their subjection, into their jurisdiction. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or a Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgment of a court of record. The judgment of a court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, decision is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. This is the United States Supreme Court speaking. It is as conclusive on this court, in other words, they're superior to them, as it is on other courts. It puts an end to the inquiry concerning the facts by making a decision, by deciding it. Again, ex parte Watkins, 3-peater. Okay, God is the king of the court. Common law and natural law are synonymous. Therefore, under common law, we the people are judged, ruled by the governor of the universe. Therefore, God is the king of the court, and the grand or the trial jury total the king's bench, also known as the tribunal. And as long as the king's bench reflects the will of the Lord through his principles and authorities, we the people will be blessed sovereigns above the above all earthly states. Quorum ispo regi means before the king himself. It's the old name of the court of king's bench, which was originally held before the king in person. The people of this state, the people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereigns, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. That was Lansing versus Smith. Matter of fact, that was repeated in quite a few other cases. But anyway, that was the case, I guess, the original case. The King's Bench. Black's Law says that the King's Bench is the Supreme Court of Common Law in England, being so called because the king used to formally sit there in person. So in our courts, King God sits there, and we the people represent him. We are the King's Court. In person, the style of the court being quorum ipso regi. Quorum nobis, Black's Law. Before us ourselves, before the people, the king's people. This is the king's court, and it's before us ourselves, we the people. Quorum nobis, before us ourselves, in the king or queen's bench, applied to writs of error directed to other branches of the same court, from the full bench to the court at Nisi Prius. So There is. That's exactly what we're doing, by the way, is we are filing under quorum nobis before we, the people ourselves, under the king's bench. We sit on the king's bench, and we're bringing notice and commands to Nisi Prius courts or the servants. Tribunal, the seat of the judge, the place where he administers justice. But by this term is more usually understood the whole body of judges, who composes a jurisdiction. Sometimes it's taken for the jurisdiction which they exercise, but the whole body of judges, the people, the jury. Only the king, people are sovereign. The state is a clipped sovereignty. Here in New York, we have a code, New York Code, Section 2. Supreme sovereignty is in the people. No authority can, on any pretense whatsoever, be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as it shall be derived from and granted by the people of the state. Blackstone commentaries here. Consequences of this prerogative is the legal obiguity of the king. His majesty in the eye of the law is always present in all courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, that's the people, the jury, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. So we're to reflect righteousness, sense of honor, sense of justice, and sense of mercy. And of course, we have to answer to the king himself at some point in time if we don't apply those principles. Okay, sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law. Did I read that? No, I didn't. It is not subject to the law, for it is the author and the source of the law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the laws is the definition and limitation of power. That's Yick Woe versus Hopkins. Okay, there's quite a few others talking about that sovereignty, and people can read that on their own. And this brings us to extraordinary writs. And this is where we're at. This is where we've come through the court system, and we're at that point now. We're just writing writs. We're commanding. And on the top of our papers now, we are printing Coram Nobis. I believe that's how you say it. Yeah, Coram Nobis, which means this is before the people themselves of the king's bench, we the people. We're not asking them to do anything. We're not asking them to decide anything. We're telling them what they need to do.
Hey, John.
Face the consequences, yeah.
There's a point here that some people don't understand when we talk about the king and the king's bench and all this. They don't understand that back when the king had this power, the kings acknowledged that they were only there through the power of God. As a matter of fact, even in Canada to this day, because the king bowed to the power of God, they actually have what they call chancery law, which was under the law of God before the church rotted its head out. It was based on the Ten Commandments. And chancery law there is higher than the king's law. You see, what in this country, if you don't acknowledge that there's a supreme being that we get our rights from, that's why we keep referring to the king, because the king goes back to God, who gives us that supreme being that gives us our rights. You see, they think we're bowing to English common law. This is a common misconception. Oh, that's English common law. That's out of England. Look, when the kings were doing the right thing, they were subservient to who? To the God of the universe, right? They got their power because he let them. They acknowledge that, you know? So,
well, yeah, I think that point is clearly made by the Magna Carta. Anybody reads the Magna Carta, it's like
I'm telling you,
every
people,
fifth word, it talks about God.
People don't want to acknowledge that. And what they do is they say, oh, you're doing a king's thing. And that. No, the power of the king reverted to the people. And we have to understand that. We don't draw from the fact that we're human or we're man. We're saying there's something above us. And that's the thing that you have to get warm and fuzzy with. Because if you don't have that, then you have men. And I just wanted to make that point.
Well, yeah, and the book that I brought up the last 2 weeks, and I'm going to bring it up again, which is The Excellence of Common Law by Brent Winters. Everybody should read that. I don't know that people want to run too quickly out to buy that particular book and to read that as a first book of knowledge of law, because it's not going to give you what you're looking for. But anybody who has gone through our course, okay, and they've been through, you know, a common law course, which is, you know, inside of our civics course, and they've done some studies on the Constitution and some historical background of our nation and other things, and have started to read our book, our papers, okay? At that point, I think they have the prerequisites to really now go and read this book, Under Common Law, by Brent Winters. And again, you know, some people might be able to read it without the prerequisite, but it certainly helped. I know it helped for me because I read it first and then came back and read it a second time. And maybe because it's the second reading, all of a sudden all these new things that I didn't see. And this is like my fourth reading on this book, you know, and I'm not really reading it directly through. I'm kind of just jumping around now into different places because there's so much meat in this book. But you know, the way the original was set up, you know, the first time on planet Earth that this system was set up the way that it should have been set up was about 600 B.C. When Israel came out of Egypt and God became their king. After 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, and they eventually settled down in a promised land for 400 years, they had 400 years of rule by God, which was extremely prosperous. And the people enjoyed peace. Even though they went to war with many kings around them, they were successful and victorious in everything they did. And this was for a 400-year period. Every once in a while, they'd sin before God, and then they'd fall into trouble, and they'd start to be defeated. And then when they repented, again, they were picked back up again. So God was giving us a picture back then. So what happened in England, about 300-400 AD, the Anglo-Saxons brought this idea of being ruled by the mind of God instead of the mind of man. So they didn't want to be ruled by men. They wanted to be ruled by God. And they started working off of principles and maxims and that kind of thing. They came to England, and they were spreading this idea throughout all of Europe. And when they eventually found the Bible, and they actually fused together with the Bible. Matter of fact, they may have originated from this kind of thinking and didn't have the written word, but eventually fused to it. So however that was discovered, I know I was kind of surprised to find that the Anglo-Saxons, which, by the way, are the Vikings that you hear all these mean, terrible things about. They go around slaughtering people and killing people and all those things. That's just the other side. That's the made-up part of history. But in any event, they brought this together. And we see it come to really light in the Magna Carta, where the Magna Carta starts to lay it out in writing, and we start to see the idea. They made their mistake by choosing a king. And that's when Israel went astray, in the days of Samuel, and the people wanted a king, and Samuel went to God and said, they want a king. And I told them, you're the king, but they want someone else. They said, okay, go let them choose the man, and we'll give them the king. And that didn't work out very well. That was the beginning of the downfall, and everything went downhill after that. Of course, we had David and his son, Solomon, but even that has its problems. But the bottom line was Israel went downhill because they left King God, and they wanted a man for a king like other nations. So England picked this idea up, the people of England, through the Anglo-Saxons' teachings and bringing it into England and other places. But they made the mistake in making a man a king in order to represent God, when they should have really went to the jury process, which was originally taught in Mosaic law, and let the people decide. And then you have a judge, which really is a magistrate and guides the thing through. But nevertheless, this is the process they went, and they started to fall apart also. America was the first nation since Israel to come from the position of let's let God be king, and we'll sit on his bench, which is the jury bench, which is where we belong. And remember, the king's supposed to reflect God. He's supposed to reflect the just thing and the people, the will of the people, that which is right. But our position is the juries act under principles, seek out the truth, and make the decision on what the best that they can. And that's the best form of judgment that you can get anywhere. But let's go finish this off. Extraordinary remedies, the writs of mandamus, we command, quo warranto, king's inquiry of usurpers, habeas corpus, release from unlawful imprisonment, and some others are sometimes called extraordinary remedies, in contradistinction to the ordinary remedy by action. Receivership is also said to be an extraordinary remedy. Okay, this was Prudential Securities versus Three Forks. An extraordinary writ issues by a superior court to an inferior court to prevent, and that's what we're doing. We're the superior court, and we've filed papers on the inferior courts to prevent the latter from exceeding its jurisdiction, exactly what we're doing. Either by prohibition, either by forbidding it from assuming jurisdiction in a matter over which it has no control, or from going beyond its legitimate powers in a matter of which it has jurisdiction. State versus Medla. An extraordinary judicial writ issuing out of a court of superior jurisdiction directed to an inferior court or tribunal exercising judicial powers for the purpose of preventing the inferior tribunal from usurping a jurisdiction with which it is not lawfully vested. State versus Stanfield. Let me jump down a little bit. Quo wanto, in Old English practice, a writ in the nature of a writ of right for the king against him who claimed or usurped any office, franchise, or liberty to inquire by what authority he supported his claim in order to determine the right. It lay also in the case of non-user or long neglect of a franchise or misuser or abuser of it, being a writ commanding the defendant to show by what warrant he exercises such a franchise, having never had any grant of it or having forfeited it by neglect or abuse. Okay, and finally the conclusion, which really I kind of ties all this together, I think, and Gerard started to hit on some of that points. Conclusion, King God rules through honorable people who judge by biblical principles and will answer directly to the King God if they deviate from said principles. The King's bench is the seat of the tribunal, also known as the judges, for the Supreme Court of Common Law, which is a court of record, made up by one or more sovereigns with the power to fine or imprison for contempt and functions independently of the persons. Now, the reason why it's one or more sovereigns is sometimes we have the equity side of the court. And the equity side of the court is one judge. He's an elected judge, and he is to obey the supreme law of the land, Article 6. And as long as he's doing that, then he's executing the right process. And often in contract law, you might want to go into an equity court as long as they're just. But anyway, the King's Bench is the seat of the tribunal, also known as judges, for the Supreme Court of Common Law, made up of one or more sovereigns with the power to fine or imprison, contempt functions independently of the person of the magistrate. Therefore, the King's Bench can only be the jury, or the, either grand or petite, or the sovereign of the court. Whenever the King's Bench is impaneled by the people, a court of record is open, whether it is in an investigative role in the grand jury or it is in the pretrial mode, petty jury. Its authority, power, judgments, and jurisdiction is final, cannot be challenged or overturned. All courts not of record, that's without the King's Bench, are inferior courts whose jurisdiction is limited and special and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts proceed according to the statutory law. Jurisdictions and procedure is defined by statutes. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Extraordinary writs emanate from the King's Bench, being extraordinary remedies. And that's what we are doing. We are bringing forth extraordinary writs for extraordinary remedies. And the more we bring in, the more pressure we put on, the more courts we file with, 94 to be totaled, the more pressure we put on them, the more people we get behind us, the more pressure we put on them, and eventually they will not be able to stand up to that pressure. Only the people can save America, and it's through this process alone, by getting up and taking control of the courts, and that's what we're doing right now. Okay, that brings us to the end. I don't know, do you have anything to add to that, Gerard, or before we open up to the mics?
I just wanted to say that, you know, you were talking about not reading this Brent Winters until you had some background to stand on.
People can try, but I think you get a lot more out of it.
Well, what happens is we've been programmed, and I know myself, you keep going back to those things that they brainwash us to. And let me tell you something. In court, those are fatal errors when you're asking them, and you don't understand that when they say superior court, that means you. You got to get your head around that. If you know, remember we used to go, I got to open up my court of record. No. When you're there, it is your court. If you do the paperwork right, it is open. Remember how hard it was to get our head around the idea that we were in control. You see, you can't be in control if you don't know what you're doing. And you look at how could you be a king if you don't have the ability to rule? So you have to have the ability to understand that you're the sovereign. I mean, what kind of sovereign are you if you're going, please help me and tell him to leave me alone?
And if you don't have experience in the things, it goes right over your head because it doesn't register. It's like when you speak in front of a child, you may say 30 words to this young child. They may get about 5 words. The rest went way over their head. Then you get them later. Didn't you hear what I told you? No, they didn't.
It takes a little while for that to distill so that you are making these changes in your head without thinking about them. It has to be habit. And when you don't have those habits, you're going to make mistakes because you don't have the fundamentals. And that's all I wanted to say. You know, that whole thing about the king and all this other stuff, you got to get that whole process down in your head. And I've said this before, you know, I thought I knew the Constitution. Then I took Bagnarik's course. Now, Bagnarik's course doesn't give you a chapter, you know, a section and all that very much. But when you get done with it, you really have it in your chest. You understand.
Gives you the fundamental mindset.
Right, the mindset. You know why you're supposed to be free. You know what it means to be an American. You know what this experiment was. You know why you're going to be able to stand up to tyranny and you're going to speak with authority. Now you have to go find the words. But it puts you in a certain mindset that is, you can't do it without that mindset. You know, and that's when you really start learning. As your mind starts clicking, then you'll pick the other things up because they fit naturally into that soil that you created for that. And it really is, you know, look at these things won't take root until your soil is proper. And that's what it's about. It is a change in your mind. And, you know, when you walk around confident, people leave you. Like if you're walking in a crowded area in a city down a bad neighborhood street, there's some people that won't get attacked because they have a confidence. And that's the way we need to become with our studies, to have that confidence that emanates out from us. And then you can speak with authority. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. I'll yield.
Okay. All right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to open up the Q&A before I hit that button. I want to let anybody who's spoken in the past week or two, wait off about 5 minutes before you get into the queue. Let the people who have not had a choice, you know, a chance to actually speak, ask a question, or make a comment in the past, couple of weeks, let them get into the queue first. And like I said, 5 minutes later, then anyone can get into that queue. So we're going to open up the queue, let's see. Okay, so hit *6 to get into the queue. Again, we want to get people who haven't had the opportunity in the past week or two to get in, to come in first. Gerard, I'm going to pass this to you to start off, and I got to get away from my computer for 5 or 10 minutes, and I'll be back, and I'll pipe in and out as you go on anyway. Okay? Gerard?
I'm sorry. I was talking, and I was muted.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so you got it. Okay,
yeah.
So you got the queue. Go ahead.
Okay, so we're going to open up the next one in the queue, which is Missouri. It looks like Shasta. I can't read it real good.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, how you doing? What's up?
I'm hanging in there just like you guys.
Yeah, right.
I just have a simple thing with Sheila, who was talking about, it was a generic topic, the solution. What is the solution? I've been carrying this around in my heart for many, many years now, and it is a good thing that people are beginning to communicate and open their minds and talk about the things of reality and nature and goodness and, you know, what we need to do to make our world work. Okay, so my idea is community. And I know that we're reaching out to the million signature campaign. So this is a wonderful idea. Now, to initiate everyone that's involved with that and go into our communities, which is starting in our own neighborhood, one block at a time and branching out from there, and have maybe a commitment from those who we contact in our nature, in our neighborhood, to reach out to maybe 5 or 6 more of their friends to reach out. And I can see this as a spiritual network already in my mind. So in a physical reality, I can see this coming into play quicker than not. And a way to approach those who would be in elongated conversations. Basically, it's about the vote. I value my vote. I'm a voter. I'm a this or a that. Now, with that concept, I know that people are aware of now that the vote is a sham.
Yeah,
at least. So a way to reach the language so that it gets in, so even when you're not there, they're thinking about it. One person, one action, and a verified word. So would not each individual that thinks that they're a voter want to have a personal, active, verified word of what they love in their heart to take place and be able to be implemented in our America?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we've been working on reaching out in the community, and part of that was some of the flyers that were going out that Rich Merritt was doing to get people's juices flowing, like you're saying. You give that pinprick that gets them thinking, and that's kind of what it's about. And, you know, look, at everybody can feel free in their counties. You should be talking to your sheriffs. You should be giving them the Corwanto, you know. And look, at when I'm on a grocery line in the store, I start conversations. I'm a pain in the neck, you know what I mean? And sometimes you get into a line, people don't want to talk, but you'd be surprised how many people are really fed up and just looking to have somebody, you know, give them some kind of hope. And once you do that, then when you have your like-minded people, get them together, get them to this forum here. But even having them join and then work your town and your county. Look, there's a lot of stuff. As things get worse, you're going to be forced to operate on a local level, no doubt about it. Look at those guys in there that you voted for that are running your town, have a lot more power than you think they do. And you have to keep their feet to the fire, because they're going to do stupid things, especially in hard times. And you have to be getting down there bringing them back to where they need to be. You know, I mean, I was in government. I ran, and I was a town councilman and the deputy supervisor for 4 years. And I really learned about politics the hard way, you know what I mean, being a newbie when I went in. But I don't feel that that's the place for me at this point, because I'm looking out at a bigger picture. That's why I'm in this NLA movement. And it's a national movement. It's actually a worldwide movement. However, it works just as well at the town level, and people should be as conscientious on the town level. You know, John and I have been banging around our local courts. They all know us. You know, when we come in, they hate to see us there because they know some people love to see you there, because what happens is if you go there and you conduct yourself honorably and you conduct yourself in such a way that you're schooling the judge like this other guy. Look at, they complimented him. The prosecutor and the judge, or whatever he wasn't a prosecutor, but nevertheless, they complimented him on his abilities. And you see, once you got them eaten out of your hand, now they'll take direction from you. You know? So it's like when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Look at, when you learn something, you give it out there and you'll get back too. You should always look at this as a process that never stops, you know. So I don't want to get off too much on that, but I definitely appreciate what you're saying. And ideas like this are ideas that should go into that media group. Like we have different – what we've done is, because you can come here on a Monday night and give an idea and people hear, oh, that's nice, but will it ever get acted on? If you throw it out to that committee that has 8 or 10 or 12 people – And somebody will get an idea, and then you'll get something going. We got a lot of different programs going because we're putting people's heads together. And what we're finding out is that we have a lot of talent here in NLA, lots and lots of talent. So you brought up a good point, but I don't want to get into specifics tonight because we've got a lot of people in the queue. I want to move on. You should try to get into some of these committees. Like, you should talk to Sheila. She's running 2 or 3 of them, and there's different places where those abilities that you just said, you can actually put them into action. And that's what we're about. We're about action. NLA is action. That's why we're so attractive, because we're not standing on the corner with a sign, and we're not doing all this other stuff that amounts to nothing. We have paperwork in the court, and we are marching forward.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, and I want to bring you back into being grounded here, because I don't want to be overridden and overheard and make it complicated. There is the big picture. But to reach out and get that initial contact is what I'm talking about. Keep it simple, keep it stupid. I know you've heard that before. Keep it simple, keep it stupid. I want to start out in just a simple grabbing a consciousness into and hand them a business card. Give them the website, but initiate that initial contact consciously, whatever it takes. But the simpler, the better.
That's what we're doing with Rich Barrett's program.
Then you will get a lot of hits with the National Alliance, okay?
I
don't want to be overridden by making it so complicated, because everything is complicated. We have to start with simplicity, because that is our foundation, our base foundation rock that we build on.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And what I was going to say is we do have these programs of keeping things simple on a grassroots level to grab people's attention. And you know, you should join those programs. They're out there. We're begging for people, and we need people to instruct people. We have lots of good posters and lots of good, all kinds of good grabby things. People are sending me videos. I got a video from Kalama the other day. It was a great video. Look, people are also into media. Well, guess what? You better learn how to grab them out of media, whether you agree with it or you don't agree with it. You better have a method of connecting with them in that 30 seconds, and people are doing it. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. I got Colorado Max. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, Gerard. I have a video I want everyone to share. I just finished, and it is a message to the Tea Party. It's on my channel, V8 Freedom, Victor, the number 8, Freedom. It's my YouTube channel.
Okay.
And it asks the questions, are protesting, writing your congressman working? And it goes into NLA. It goes into U.S. versus Williams. It's about 10 minutes.
There you
go. So it's out there. I want you to take a look at it and forward it to your friends.
Okay. Listen, you should, when you do get something like that, you should send me the URL to Gerard at National Liberty Alliance. Because.
Okay, I will.
Yeah, do it. I don't know if you did. I went through I tried to go through all my mail before the Monday night meetings, but I could have missed it. But I'd appreciate it if you do that. It'll help me get to it. And thanks for doing that, too.
And I shared it with Sheila, too. So
okay, very good. Yeah, this thing is going to break loose very shortly because everybody's ready. Okay, Pennsylvania, Ebert, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Whatever happened to that indictment about that cop or whatever he was in New York that choked the guy to death?
Well, that indictment is sitting there waiting for us to go down and act on it, because we've done other things since then, and we have two people down there. We're working on a private attorney general with a girl from New York City that's very active in the courts. I don't know exactly where it is. I have to ask John what's going on with those two people as far as, you know, when we can move. We put an indictment in, and it's sitting there. And, of course, you know, they're not going to recognize us until we get in the courts. We were hoping that we could have the next five or six papers that are coming out, because they're very powerful, and it will push them to the point where they will stop ignoring it. Now, they have taken notice, and especially in New York City, because there's a lot of investigation going on down there, and you have the chief administrative judge there. I think it was Lippman in New York. He said, "Oh, we have to get these juries out of the prosecutor's hands with these cops, you know, when there's a death involving the cop." And so, you know, the only reason he's saying that is because he's feeling the pressure and he has to say something. They ignore until they can't ignore anymore. And one of the things by them ignoring is a further indictment. If you read our paperwork, what John's talking about is, look at the unified common law grand jury across the country in all 50 states has put an indictment in on that police officer. Now, we're not making a judgment of whether he was guilty or innocent. What we're saying is, look, it needs to be investigated. It needs to turn into something more than what you did. And it doesn't need a puppet grand jury to do it. It needs we the people to do it. Now, when they don't answer that, that's a serious offense. Look, we have a right to come together and look, we're not even petitioning our government, but we do have a right to petition. And more than that, we have a right to order them when they're out of order, because we are the boss. So when the boss comes in and you ignore him, what's the next thing that happens when you ignore the boss? You get fired.
Fired.
And what's happening is they're starting to realize that people are getting so fed up with the system. You know, they've gotten so greedy and so hungry and so haughty and arrogant that they're chewing people up and spitting them out more and more every week, exponentially every week. And what's happening is there's a backlash that's coming around the back. You got that federal prosecutor, Parit Bharara, down there that's indicted Sheldon Silver. He's looking at Cuomo. He's looking at what's his name? The other guy there that drives me crazy. But nevertheless, these are people that I would have never, never, ever imagined that they would have got a federal indictment. Look, there's trouble. It's trouble on the OK Corral there someplace, because what's happening is this thing is falling apart probably from the top at this point. The bottom is coming up, but they're falling apart from the top. You know, this guy was appointed as a federal attorney. And he went in there, and something happened. Something happened politically. And I don't want to get into it on the call. I have my own ideas about what happened. But this is exactly the type of stuff that the other side doesn't think about. Look, it's the best made plans of mice and men. They think they got a perfect plan. They put somebody in. They screw him over here. They don't even realize they're screwing him. Now he's got a bad taste in your mouth. You got your back to him. He's sticking a knife in your back because he's mad. That's their legacy. That's what they have to look forward to here. So I don't know exactly when that case is going to move forward, but the paperwork that we're trying to file, these next five or six papers, are very instrumental to what we actually do down there. And that can break at any time, because when they really realize that the force of our group, the numbers and the determination, and they start seeing these videos going viral all over the place, and that's when they're going to go, hell, crap, we better do something because they're coming. So don't believe that it didn't make a difference yet. I know it's taken some time, but you know what? In that time, we have organized much better. We have better programs, because ultimately, for us to succeed, regardless of how right we are, righteous, godly, in the law and all this other stuff, we still need a certain critical mass. And that's what we're collecting right now. That's what we're collecting tonight, is that critical mass. And it doesn't have to be huge, but God only knows the number of what it's going to be before he takes his remnant and takes them to war. And that's going to be us. And when the time comes, we'll have lightning bolts. We won't need 40 caliber bullets. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting that it's going to get to a point, and it's going to come down to where they can no longer ignore us. And actually, if they really read our paperwork, they should be scared, because our paperwork really puts them in a place, when they really read it, in a place that they don't want to be. And they're in it already, and they don't even realize it. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead, if that's it.
Okay, that's good.
Thank you very much, Ebert. Okay. Gary Hoffman, you've been unmuted.
Hello, Gerard. Do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay. We have, in an adjoining county, a judge that has decided to ban all electronic equipment from the courthouse. And we're, a lot of us are upset about it. We're not really sure what...
Sue him. Sue him for violating your unalienable right to an open court. Sue him in a federal court and make sure you use the U.S. code charges against him. I believe it's him or her, whatever, particularly U.S. 18-241 and 242. And make sure you stay in your jurisdiction there. Otherwise, and if that federal judge violates you, sue him too.
Okay. If my understanding is correct, he has a right to make rules.
He has no rights. He has no rights to make any rules or anything. He's going according to the rules of Chancery, which allows him to make his rules. And you have to say, excuse me, we're not in under Chancery. We go according to the rules of common law, which means he has no say on any rules. Okay? The people decide. And what's wrong with people coming sitting in the courtroom to listening to what's going on? What's wrong with people coming into the courtroom to bring out of the courtroom what's going on? Do they have something to hide? That's, you know, the cops play this game all the time. Can I take a look at your car? No, you can't. What, do you have something to hide? Absolutely not. Well, why don't you ask him? Does he have something to hide? And you got to be careful.
Well, the alternative to the cameras, and there is an alternative, and William brought this up the other night. Look, you have two or three people or four people or 10 people sitting there with notepads, taking notes, and then filling out affidavits afterwards. They're done. Look, if I was a judge, I'd almost want the camera there instead of the notepads and the affidavits. You know what I'm saying? Because, look, those people are hearing you, and they're hearing what they're hearing, and maybe they don't like you, and they're writing the stuff down. But two people together, you know, that's a witness. That's under law. That's under God. And so if he wants everybody sitting there taking notes and writing affidavits, it's just as damaging. You know what I mean? So, I mean, and even with their own rules, I understand where the judge believes that he can make rules for his side of the bar. But guess what? Your side of the bar where the camera is and that stuff, he may want his papers double spaced. That's his rule. That we'll live with that. We'll give him a little bit because he's an official. He has certain things that maybe he likes on his side of the bar. But where his bar ends is where my unalienable rights begin. And that's what I would explain to him. Listen, you can make certain rules, what time you have potty break and all that stuff. That's your job. You're the traffic cop here. But don't tell me that I can't tape as a record. Or I'll bring 500 people in here with notepads and we'll see how you fare with that. That's right. What I would do. You know what I'm saying? You want 500 people taking notes and giving affidavits? You know, look, if he messes up really bad and you got four or five or six people that are writing down and willing to swear sworn statements, he's done. They get six people writing all the same stuff down that he did wrong. Their own people will take him out because they can't hold up to that pressure.
Well, he has messed up really bad, and my question was, and you answered it, he does have a right to make rules for his side of the bar, for his staff, but that's where it ends.
Exactly. Just like everything else, they want to overstep their bounds. That's why we are where we are, because they're always overstepping their bounds.
That's what I've told several people. This is a microcosm of what the whole country is all about. We've allowed our rights, our God-given rights, to be usurped by these little tyrants.
And don't forget that law that Eric has you carrying in there, I think that was a federal court, too. So if it's been decided in one court, it's good for all courts. Because under good faith and credit, they can only increase your freedom. They can't take it away. So if the top court of the land has said that that's constitutional and they can't stop you, then guess what? Every other state, they can't stop you, exactly. And what I would do is I would give him paperwork to that effect. Look, this comes out of the Supreme Court. You're not gonna follow a Supreme Court ruling, precedent, whatever you want to call it. I hate using the word precedent because they abuse that too. But you know what I mean. He should feel intimidated at that point. You know?
So we should try to educate him before we file in federal court.
I would try to educate him. I would say, look, here's the deal. Look, number one, this is what we're going to do. Look, I got people with notepads. What's the difference? Matter of fact, you may want a camera to question, that you can compare to the notepads, if you know what I mean. And if you don't do that, the other thing is ultimately you're bound under the law. And if you want me to take it to federal court, we're willing to do that too. So, but I think you should save face and save and just let these things in and be a hero to the people.
Okay.
We could do it the easy way or we could do it the hard way.
It would be their choice at that point.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, do they have a right to limit the gallery in a courtroom?
Only, I don't know about that except for fire rules. In other words, let's say they got so many people that the fire chief could say it was unsafe. Sure, they could kick.
That's about it. Other than that, they can't have people leave the courtroom. All courts are open, and they can't decide who's got to leave and who doesn't leave.
And look, if they know they're going to have an overflow crowd.
Get a bigger room.
They're supposed to get a big or you do this too. I've seen this done. They get closed circuit and get television with cameras in another room for the people to listen and watch in that room. That's the advantage. And when you say, oh, no cameras, well, right there, they're going to cut the courtroom down to however many people can fit in there, and they're going to cut everybody else out. If you get a real notorious case that everybody wants to see, they don't have a right to keep us out of there. Like John said, you either get a bigger room or put your closed circuit TV in. So, if you say no electronic devices, then all of a sudden there's no closed circuit TV allowed. You see how this thing is insidious. So anyway, you got a lot of room to work on this guy, is what I would say.
Well,
so,
he's incurred the wrath of quite a few people, and it's a good chance for us to wake up some more people along the way.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to file complaints on him if he doesn't comply, because you get enough people and do them in a professional way with a sworn affidavit. The guys that look at that are his peers, but they know what a sworn affidavit is, and that could be enough for them to take him off the bench or stick him down in some traffic court or something,
Okay.
So, anyway, let's move on. I don't want to take
Thank
too
you,
long.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome. Okay, David Wallen from Michigan, you've been unmuted.
Okay, let's see here if I can get to it.
Okay.
I'm here.
You're coming in loud and clear.
Okay, I am unmuted already. Okay, good.
Yes, you're unmuted. I can hear you.
Okay, I noticed that if... in developing states and counties that don't have active county committees forming grand juries, that when you go to get a county grand jury handbook, that you can't order just one. I believe that's a huge mistake, and there needs to be either a service that does it or somebody in the national arena that does it, not necessarily John. I realize they need to limit what they do, but before a person orders 100, they want to order one to look at it, especially if they don't have any contact person and they've come on the website. So that's my suggestion.
Let me tell you, John has given away more of those books scot-free when somebody in the county says, look, I got to get them out and I can't afford it. And because there were certain mailings where we wanted it included in the mailing. Look, if anybody is in any county and they need a book, we will supply them, we will put the cry out, other people will supply them, neighboring counties will. All you got to do
is ask. That's the key. Work
ask.
Within your state coordinators. But people can look at this. If they click on the jurist handbook out there, you'll go to a page, and the page will take you to a place to order it. But you also can click the grand jury book, which is the final printing, and you can see it right there, the way it's written.
I'll be honest with you. My first book, I printed out myself.
We used to always print them out. Yeah.
I used to fold them and staple them, and they're not too bad. They're a little bigger.
Yeah.
They're a little
all
bigger.
All I'm talking about is just growing up here in our website so it's automated and someone does it automatically. They just mail out so many every place.
People have to buy them. I mean, I don't have the money to go out and buy all the
I don't doubt that, John. I don't doubt that.
No, he's
saying
I get calls from people.
$2 instead of $65.
Yeah, it's too much. No, we'd never be able to keep up to that. It's just an impossible. My workload is too great as it is.
You should do it, John. I realize you can't do it, but our site ought to be automated. So a service that we pay for anything so that a person can order one, because if I start handing out handouts that I've furnished to Gary Jolly, have as a website, I have to click before I find it, and then I got to decide if I want one and all I find is 100. It's got to be really simple.
In the future, that might be possible. A number of things. Number one, nothing is really totally automated. Eventually, it has to come down to the person to physically take the books, package it, and take it down to the post office and then pay for the mailing. And that's just the hardcore reality. And if I offered to people to buy one or two or half a dozen, I'd be busy all day long just wrapping, because a lot more people would be ordering, and it just couldn't be fulfilled. But what people can do, and we've mentioned this in the past, haven't done it in a while, people can come together and 5-10 people, and they can order 100, and then they can share it among themselves. Or you get together in your state, you find out someone in your state's bought them already, and say, hey, can you spare a couple? I mean, what do we do with them? We get them, we give them out. That's what we do with them. We're not supposed to just put them in a box into the closet or anything. We hand them out. So you'd be someone they'd hand it out to or to someone else. But nevertheless, people can download in PDF form the entire book right on that page. And if we can give it for free, we definitely would give it for free. We give everything away for free until it costs. I'm not rich, so I just don't have the money to spend to pay for these things. And maybe someone who's rich can back us up and we could do a lot more. I mean, unfortunately, rich people are not involved with what we're doing. I guess they're very comfortable. They're not worried about nothing. It's all the poor people that are struggling here that have come to terms and realize what's going on. And that's the problem. But there are people who, from time to time, they need them, and I'll send them out 100 or 50. Or I had someone on the phone, and I said, matter of fact, the other day, and I meant to mail them out this weekend. I didn't get them out, but I do have the order on my desk. And I figure I'll send a person out a dozen of them because of other things that are going on, and they needed some. But we'll do what we can,
Yeah.
And I really, if everybody, I'll tell you what, if everybody that follows us were to give $5 a month, and this is what we ask everybody to do. Very few people do that, and I don't understand it really, because if you really believe in something, you should be supporting it, because nothing is for free. But if everybody was to give $5 a month, there'd be a lot more we could do. I mean, we have a big campaign going on right now, and we don't have the funds to accomplish it, and we're struggling. We're begging people for money in the background. We have one person particularly who has a lot of money, and we're going to try to ask him if he would donate some money, to really get this project off. And that's the big mailing we got coming up. And we're torn between, we got these signatures, 1 million signatures. Now, a lot of people are complaining that, it's too small. You can't really write in there. And they want 20. They don't understand how many millions of papers are going to be involved on 20 signatures per page. We could only get 100 per page. And now, right now, it's at a 12-font line. And I wish we could make it bigger. I thought about using a legal paper that could make the font bigger, or we can put more signatures on it. The problem is I've already experienced a nightmare with legal paper, trying to get that on a New York program in the committee man process, and people didn't know that it was supposed to be legal paper. They're not sure what we're even talking about sometimes, or they think their printers can't print it. I mean, there's 1,000 different, excuses, or not real. People just aren't realizing things about that. So you stay with what people have, and you have to stay with the 8x11. So we're stuck with that, with a small font, small signature. Now, the big problem is, how are we going to do this? I thought about putting it on a CD, but we're not going to have the impact if we put it on a CD. Someone told me, they sent me an email, and they said, what are you talking about? You don't have to worry about it. It's already being, the papers and the printing's already being paid for, because we're doing it on our end. We're sending it into you, and you got it. Well, we got to send it to 94 courts. And we're certainly not going to send them the original signatures. We're going to hold that. But we need to make copies. So each one of those papers takes time. We have to feed it in, create a PDF out of it, categorize it by state. And we're talking, if we're doing 100 signatures per paper, we're looking at 10,000 pages. Okay. If we do both sides, we'll save on paper. It's 5,000 papers. If we do 20, we're looking, we're getting into, and then you have to multiply that 10,000 by 94 courts. So you're 94 times 10,000. I mean, these numbers become really huge. And I don't know what it costs to print out a paper, maybe 4 cents a piece or something between the toner and the paper. So this is something that has to be done. And yet we don't have the money to do it. We're trusting that when we get all the signatures in and we're ready to mail these out, which we're looking maybe about 6 weeks from now, and we're not going to stop. We'll continue past that point, but because we want more than a million. But, you know, we're trusting that at some point we're going to get the money from someplace. I mean, just the mailing alone is like 10 grand, $10,000. And that's just coming from one place, from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. If we were to duplicate these things, you know, from every grand jury, there's 50 of them, the unified states. I mean, it just gets so big. And people can't, no one can handle this on their own. It's just too much money. So again, you know, we're going to save the nation if the people want the nation to be saved. If the people don't want the nation to be saved, it's not going to be saved. And I'll tell you right now, people are speaking and telling us by A, their participation, or B, they're supporting us in a financial way to get this job done. So if we don't accomplish it because we don't have the money, then the people spoke. If we don't accomplish it because we don't get a million people, then the people spoke. I'm not happy with that. I'm going to go to my grave. You know, there's a lot of people that feel that way because I'm not going to submit and live under these people's terms. And so it is what it is. We either you believe in something and we support it, or we don't support it. It's that simple.
Yeah.
John, I think you misunderstood me. I looked at a $65 thing that with postage would be a dollar and you collect two for it, so you would have money from your most recent arrivals and a good address for them to boot because you automated. And that way, the most interested people, you have a new mailing list that comes out of it because it's automated on the website. Click here, it's sent to you, fill out this form and send $2 through, and that's the right way to do it.
If we had a staff, we don't have a staff. I don't have a staff. You know, people call me and say, don't worry about it. Don't you have your secretary? I don't have a secretary. I don't have a staff. I have my daughter who helps me. Okay.
I don't have any problem, John. If the method I'm suggesting is offered and you don't have anybody come forward to do it voluntarily because it's a big job, well then offer the person half of the net. In other words, if the cost is 65 cents, the postage is 45, you got 85 or 95 cents, and of that half goes to the person who bothers to go to the post office. And that way you have a staff, and you help someone who can't help
anybody. I don't think it's that easy because you got to get someone to commit. If they're not going to volunteer and they want to be paid, then you got to pay them. People don't want to work that way, but if they did and then they got bad days and that, then they don't show up. On top of that, I want to tell you something. You have to have management. Whenever you have something going on, no matter what it is, if I don't manage it, you have to, and I don't have someone that's a manager that could manage this stuff, as simple as you think it may be, believe me, it all goes to hell in a handbasket unless you got a manager checking things, making sure that things are happening. As simple as taking information off of a page and putting it into a place and creating a label, all that is labor and work. And you create that label, and then you have to list them off, then you have to print them out, then you have to put them into a file that of people you sent it out to, then you got to get the receipt, match it up with that, color code it, connect that, because sometimes people say, hey, I ordered my things and I didn't get them, and you can go back and look it up and find the person. I mean, there's all kinds of things that have to be done, and that's why, you know, when you go get shipping and handling in some places, you say to yourself, why are they charging so much money? Well, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of exercises going on to get that thing done. I tried a couple of different things and programs, and believe me, it really gets down to you receive the information. It's a cut and paste and movement and categorizing and filing and then mailing. Then the physical move to the post office is another one. You have to take this down to the post office on a daily basis. And believe me, at some point, maybe we will get to that point. At some point we can get to sell this so cheap. Like they do the constitutional booklets. The constitutional books is a lot cheaper than our books, and that's because they buy a million at a time. If we could buy a million at a time, we can really sell this dirt cheap.
Well, even our printer, if the interest was there and he knew the volume was there, he would be maybe even willing to take orders one at a time on his computer and wait until he gets 100 or 500 and then ship them out. But he has to be guaranteed. They have to be guaranteed the volume. I mean, even for you, let's say you could do it, John. You'd still have to have enough money to have those books sitting there so that when the orders came in, they could go out. So that requires a certain investment into that part of the program, right?
Exactly. We had to put, to order the original, we had to put about $15,000 into it. We got three pallets.
Right.
Which I have in my garage. They come in a certain size box, and then I have to put them into boxes of hundreds, 500s, or 1,000, whatever it is.
I'll tell you what,
people ordered.
The thing that would make this go quicker is if the county organizers, some of them would commit to getting a bunch of these and then doing like he says themselves and selling them from a dollar in their area. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what they should do. As a matter of fact, they're doing that up in Erie County. Not as in Erie County. It's Niagara County. There's someone in Niagara County who's getting them. He's giving them away, but he's also in his place of business. He puts them up there for a buck, and people are buying them for a buck. Okay, and that's fine. I'm good with that. Let them buy it.
Well, he's also talking about automating it, where somebody could click on it. We're not going to get to that point. I don't know how you could do that on a countywide basis. But eventually, we're expecting it to go. When we're successful, these books will be all over the United States. Every court is going to have to have them.
Exactly.
Every jury is going to have them. They're going to be something that's all over.
If you got 3,134 counties, which we have, you have 3,134 courts, you have 3,134 administrative groups of four. Okay, and each one of those counties, those administrative groups, would order 1,000, 2,000 to have them, because every time a jury comes in, you want to pass them out, and you give them to anybody who asks. At that point, you're right, we'd be flooding the nation totally for free. People wouldn't have to ask, buy them or go looking for them. The court will, the government will pay for it. It's part of overhead because people need juris books. And we'll take the instruction juris books and we'll kind of really take a lot of that crap out of there and put some real serious things. And maybe we'd create another book, a couple of pages that we'd add to our juris book for certain instructions on the jury. But they have to be minimum. Your instructions cannot be evasive. It can't be, pushing a person's mind this way or that way. We have to inform and teach people the principles that they need to be looking and thinking about. They already know the principles. We just have to bring them to the surface in their minds and their hearts and then make them understand. Now, look, at the end of the day, after you spend 8 hours with them, you show them some videos, you talk to them, you have a conversation with them, you get them into the mindset of becoming a jurist. And at the end of the day, okay, now you're going to go and sit on the jury on such and such a day. And let me tell you something. At the end of the day, when you're done and you make your decision, it's your conscience, and you're the one that's got to deal with God. And that's it. And I think people do the right thing. People figure this out, and people do take this serious and the people who don't, the other jurists will kick their butt. Now, what are you doing? And they have the authority to throw them off the jury, by the way. Any jury can kick anyone off the jury that they want. If someone's a troublemaker and they're not going according to the principles that they need to be operating under, the rest of the jurists can kick them off. They take a vote, get rid of that guy. But anyway,
I sent you this evening, and Gary Jolly as well. I think they're different different content, but a draft of a one-page handout that announces how to get either locally or nationally. And of course, there's no place to click yet on the national site. The national site can solve that. If the dollar figure has to be make a $5 contribution. And click here if you want to continue that monthly. as part of the in the squeeze page for ordering. I'm delighted you're handing them out, but I know that that's a cost to you. And let the people who are most recently come find an easy way to get them sent out tomorrow. And the only way to do that is to have your website automatically print your label, and you peel the label off, and you've already got them in the envelope, and they go out every morning from either your garage or the printer, or
the printer won't send them out that way. They won't get involved. I mean, they veered me off. They said, look, if you want someone to send them out, we'll ship them over to whoever you want. And they suggested an individual group that might do it. And I called them up. And the values and the money involved, I just didn't want to do it. Because we're looking for the selling of these books is not only informative, but we do make some profit on it. And NLA makes a profit on it. And that profit goes to pay the bills. And let me tell you, those sales, which have been slowing down recently, have been paying the bills, let me tell you. It's tough to meet the bills every month. Every month it's really tough. And so we do the best we can.
Perhaps.
And eventually there's certain bills we're not going to be able to pay, and at that point we'll have to see what we're going to do at that time. I don't know.
Perhaps they're slowing down only because a person can't get original or a copy without a personal contact. With you or
well, again, if you call, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, if you called any state coordinator, they could probably get you a booklet.
I've got 100 of them coming, so yeah. That's not the problem. It's just I'm thinking about making it easy for your newbie customer. You know,
right.
It needs to be easy on your end too, for sure, or it doesn't work. Right. And I appreciate that.
Well, if they
that.
Just want to read it for the content's sake, we have it up in PDF form. People can read it right there. And you know, they can print that out. And again, you can print it half page. You can print both sides, and you fold it up into a book. And it's bigger font, too. So, I mean, you could do that, too. That's how we did it before we printed the books.
Yeah, you could take and get a book from the coordinator or whatever, and then go out with that sample and show it to people and say, hey, you want it? Give me an order. So much a piece, right?
But you see, the people who want one are the people who are newbies, and they're in. Why? How did they come in? And this is why everyone should have a few books on hand. So when you introduce it, you hand it out. If I go to a meeting, any kind of a Liberty meeting, I bring the jurist handbooks with me, and I also bring pocket handbooks, constitution handbooks. I got 1,000 of those laying around, and I bring them with me to the meetings, and I make sure everybody gets each of those, and I still do printed material, to give out whatever it can, I can give out, because this is how you get people connected, is with this information. Unfortunately. Yep. A lot of it does get wasted. You know, people really don't look at it. But, you know, I don't know what the statistics are, but some people look at it and they use it, and it's valuable to them. When I got my first pocket handbook, I wore this thing down. I mean, I had it in my pocket when I came to meetings and stuff. You know, I really used it.
I don't think it's as wasted as you think, because even if they throw it down, somebody else picks
somebody
it
else
up.
Picks it up.
Yeah, it's one of those things that could go around and around and around, like putting a message on a dollar bill. And look at Dave, the fact that you brought this up and got everybody's juices flowing, something could come out of this good, because we have a lot of heads here, and that's what we've been noticing, that when we put more of the talented heads together, somebody comes up with a solution that you didn't think of while you were talking about it, you know?
Right.
So I'm hopeful.
Think about
anyway.
It, too. If you give a dollar or $5 for an item, it's different than if someone hands you something on the street. And I'm not. And the problem you have, John, is you have to make 3,141 county meetings, and there's no possibility you can do that. You can't be in every community.
Right.
Only your website can do that. So if I can get people on the website to a place they click with their iPhone or whatever, and it comes to them within the week, that's what I'm asking for. When you're ready, that's all.
Well, yeah, and again, you know, in order to save costs at a buck or two, you gotta do cheap mailing, and cheap mailing doesn't run quick. I mean, when we mail out the books, it takes anywhere from 5 to 10 days. Most places it gets it to 5 days. If it's going across the mountains and across the nation there, it may take the 7 days. And in some cases, in rural areas, it may take the full 10 days, but generally it's five for most people. And so, the you know, again, in order to get the cheaper rates, if we were to do single booklets or two or three booklets in a small envelope, we still would have to do, a mailing that we can save money in, a bulk mailing. And but again, you know, that's not too bad. You're waiting 4 or 5 days. But nevertheless, it's a manpower thing. Is this something that we could possibly have in the future? Absolutely. We can plan for it if we see it really as a necessity. But can we do it now? I wouldn't even think about it. I don't even have time to sleep sometimes. So there's just no time to do it. And you can't just give it to, you know, I can't just give it to a kid, one of my children, and just without overseeing it. And I can't just give it to anyone without overseeing it. There's always got to be a management involved with everything you do, because it's just the way it is. Unless the people, you know, you get someone that's really good. You do that by
contract. That's the way you control people, whether it's a publisher or anybody. So
right.
Anyway, I'm through.
Thank you. I could hire a firm to do it. I mean, that's. But again, you know, they're expecting a certain volume, and then if you don't reach that volume, then you got to pay a bigger bill, and it's just, it could be a mess. Right now, we just can't even think about it. But again, the idea is appreciated, and it is something we could potentially do in the future, but we don't have the people involved enough yet on that level of physical work.
Okay. Thank you. I already clicked the next. I didn't know you were going to talk, and he said goodbye, and I clicked next question. So
all right.
I'm sorry, Dave. But that was good information. Next caller is unknown, 7892. You give me your name and your state, maybe, and you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Stephen, Pennsylvania.
Okay, Stephen.
I want to thank you guys for your efforts and your love and doing what you're doing and your spirit to try to help people. A lot of people out there, I don't know if sometimes, I don't want to say it's that they don't deserve to be helped. Some people are just dismal, you know. And I'm wondering about your, I heard another lady call up earlier about she's talking about being a voter. She was so happy to be a voter. My understanding is that's like jumping into the frying pan with 2 feet, being a voter. Because we're supposed to be electors, and the voting, I'm not sure how you see that as. There's a couple people, a couple organizations like you that are working, doing the same thing. The other folks that are organizing the 13 original states, are you familiar with them?
I heard something about 13 original states, but I couldn't tell you any one of their, you know, premises or manifestos or whatever they're, you know what I mean? I don't really know what their methodology is.
They wanted to have grand juries, but I think you guys were moving forward. I'm not exactly sure everything about what your group does, but the big stickler was being a voter is they're demanding the people get out of the voter rolls. You have to actually resign being a voter because of the status that it lowers
right.
you to.
We don't get involved in that kind of thing with status. You know, I've got status because I got blood pumping through me. I'm one of the people.
Yeah.
Therefore, I have unalienable rights, and I've inherited that from the founding fathers and through my bloodline. And here I am. I've got it, and no one can take it away from me. It is eternal. When our founding fathers set this up, and people need to really understand this, they can't just go do what they're doing and get away with it.
The only reason they're doing
and getting away with it is because we've been dumbed down. But who's going to hold them to task?
Who's going to put them up against the wall? I don't know.
We are right now. We're in the courts right now, 94 of them, and believe me, I don't think they sleep at night. Now, we don't have enough pressure on them yet, and we're ready to put a lot of pressure. And again, it gets back to volunteering and help. We've been working for 6 weeks trying to get all the necessary information so we can go out and start the filings. And we file some stuff, but we have to really get this moving on the filings. But we don't have all the information. I understand we're very close now. I'll have to be talking with Robert and see where they're at with that. But once that goes, now we're really going to get active. And believe me, they're not sleeping now. They're not going to sleep at all. New York courts are so in such distress for what we have done here that the lead judges are now calling for a reform the grand jury process in New York State. And this is the 8 lead judges that control the entire state. These are the administrative judges. It's their job to make sure that the law is applied and that the Constitution, which is the law, is applied. And yet they don't do it. They're part of the crime. As a matter of fact, we indicted all of them. Now they're trying to reform the grand jury. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to take it away from the prosecutor. So the prosecutors, the people who are running as the prosecutors, they may be getting a little antsy about what's going on because they're covering up the crimes of the judges. And they're starting to realize that, wait a second, I'm not getting as much money as these guys are getting. I'm covering their rear ends. I'm making sure that they're not getting, and I'm just guessing on this, I'm making sure that they're not getting indicted because I control the grand jury. But wait a second, they're going to start coming, and he's right, we are coming after them because that's jury tampering. So now they realize we're going to go after them for jury tampering, and the judges, I think, are worried in New York. So now the judges want to not only control the jury, the trial jury in New York, they want to control the grand jury. I mean, talking about the fox in charge of the hen house. I mean,
may I ask you a question?
Yep.
What about the whores that are running that are part of the Bar Association?
Yeah. What about them?
Are you an attorney?
No. What about them?
How are they getting away with this, turning people into slaves with this birth certificate document when they grab the birthright of the people? Before the child gets a chance to inherit it, and they monetize it, and they put they put $1.8 million into a certificate.
Yeah, we're aware of all the little games that they play. And look, we have no illusions about voting. We started out as New York committee men suing the New York State Board of Elections because we realized that they got a lock on this system. They took a system that was supposed to be out of the community as a bottom-up organization, and they turned it into a communist top-down where the guys on the top are picking the candidates
instead of having literal slavery.
Right, exactly.
And they got the title to your name with that birth certificate. You can never go into a court and be a free man.
Sure you can.
Because they got this certificate over you.
There is a way to do it, but it's an uphill fight. Very few people can do it. And if you screw up in one place, you're done. But it can be done. Okay? The problem is this. The people have been dumbed down. They know nothing. I gone to a Liberty group, and I spent 2 hours talking to these people, and you can't get past the idea that they have to think about law. Immediately, in their mind, they got a mindset that immediately when you start talking law, it's like talking about Jesus Christ because people just shut down. They don't want to hear it because we've been programmed that way. When it comes to God, you're programmed to shut down, and you got to take that into the closet. When it comes to law, go get yourself a priest or a pastor or something. When it comes to law, they shut down. I got to go get myself a lawyer. I got to get an attorney. I can't do this. Nobody wants to go into court to fight because they don't know how. They've never been taught, and it's really simple. It's simple to go into court and make a case. It is very, very simple. It took me a long time to figure it out.
But is that court for you? Is that court for you? That's a public forum.
You have to open a court record.
I want to be on the private side.
Do you understand a court of record? Do you know what a court of record is and how to open a court of record? Are you familiar with that?
I'd like to know. I have a matter for a traffic ticket. One of those no driver license, no registration, no insurance, no inspection, no exhaust.
Okay, a prerequisite for you, okay, in order to really get into this and for anyone else, go take our civics course because in that we give you a full course in common law. And it is full, believe it or not, because beyond that, it's you thinking for yourself because common law is common sense and following the heart and mercy. Okay?
I mean, I have no driver license.
Okay,
I don't
so?
Have any contract with these disgusting people.
Okay, so you get stopped and what happens?
That does not compute.
They
want to
throw me in jail usually.
Yeah. Exactly. So you got to pick your battles. If that's where you want to fight
so
your battles,
God
bless you.
I'm verifying my birth certificate. I'm getting my birthright back.
Well, again, you know, a lot of this stuff, I don't have to. In order to be free and have jurisdiction and to have justice in my court, you don't have to get rid of your driver's license. You don't have to get rid of your birth certificate.
I don't want a driver license.
You don't have to get, but, you know, that's where you pick your battle to fight. I've got a driver's license because I don't have time to fight those battles all day long. I have a family to feed. I got things to do. And I can't be writing papers every day because that's what I'd be doing in court. So you got to make your battles.
Who's in charge of fundraising for your guys, for your group?
Right now, we have a campaign going, and whenever we talk about here, we have a donation button. We have a couple of things that were, you know, that's really the
who runs the
backing
who runs
us
the website?
Up.
Who's in charge of, like, you have like a store at the website where you can put items, like the Numana? That guy he's a real good quality guy.
Yeah, I do most of that. And, you know, we have the designers that design the website and do the maintenance and do the technical stuff. I do the writing and the pages and put the content.
Would you mind giving me your contact information so I could get in touch with you maybe tomorrow?
John@NationalLibertyAlliance.org. You can try me at 845-233-6560. I wouldn't do it tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon I got to run around, and in the morning I have a couple people I need to talk to. But you can try me tomorrow evening, you know.
Would you say that was 845-233-6560. How many members do you guys have now?
About 4,000. All right, well, anyway, maybe it's time to move on. Give me a call tomorrow. We'll talk.
Yeah, it's getting late.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Yeah.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hi, John. Jason.
Hey, Jason.
That's fantastic. Doing, Jason. Really, really exciting tonight. Really enjoy it. I just want to give a follow-up. In New Jersey, a wonderful clerk gave my papers to the attorney, and I filed papers of action for the sheriff and the marshal. No one took any action. So I'm on my merry way to see my federal grand jury to see what's going on. So we'll have some
papers. Yeah, you know what you could do, Jason? Did you try, you went and actually filed a criminal complaint? Is that what you did with the sheriff or the marshal?
It was official. It was, yes, I cited the code violations.
No. You have to file, and look at, if you have to file a complaint, and the complaint is not sufficient to just fill out their silly form. You have to write a affidavit, and you have to go down. Then you can fill out the complaint, attach your affidavit to them, and say, I expect that this gets taken care of. I've been damaged, and I want this to go to court. I want to be restored.
Mm-hmm.
And see what happens. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. They're probably not going to do anything. If you can get to the grand jury, well, God bless you if you can get to those people.
Well, again, we have automatic cheat sheets for affidavits, so we can certify ourselves right at the site and file necessary papers at that juncture. The whole point is to illustrate the point of the violation that are in the federal system. I mean, you have Ms. Lynch violating her own ordinances in her own backyard with the HCBC bank and other phone units. I mean, the real thing really is getting me so upset. The real people that need to be taken down are the judges. Why? Because we're the first ones to serve them. So the politicians is just a pretense to their stupidity. But the whole point here is that everyone needs to go out and be active. Do what you need to do to be the little critter inside a china shop that was stolen by the bear. So the more that you are annoying the bear, the more that he breaks. So the less he has value in the shop that he stole from you. But again, doing that succinctly, doing it as a recessive aggressiveness and filing your writ of errors, that's the case. Because, again, getting their courts is ridiculous. You try to be an honest man, and the only thing you get is a lot of jive. So lead the course, and thank you. And if you can, I know this is expensive, but if you can index every holding of your documents in National Liberty Alliance by whatever code you want to do, by subject or by number, it's necessary, because you have a wealth of information in there, and it's very hard to get through if you don't have the time. But if you pull it up like an index card in a library, you'll have more accessibility to your documents, because, again, you have the cornucopia of everything there, and it's what's making things happen. Hello?
Hi.
My yeah. Sister?
No, you're there. You're there. What I was going to say, Jason, too, is look at right now, for us, when they get sick of us in the court and they throw us out or they make a deal, that's a victory, because that's about all they're willing to do. They won't give you a victory on the record because they don't want other people doing it. But if you're in there and you're filing writ of errors and all this, they're a little more vicious in New York City. The first thing they try to do is throw you in jail. They think that that's the answer. But listen, they're already getting found out. They're already being investigated. So at some point, you become such a pain, such a burr under the saddle blanket, you'll get your victory, so to speak. And I say that quote unquote, you will get a victory, but you shouldn't have to do all that crap. Look at when we're in there, these guys will be indicted for violating your rights. And that's not happening right now. Well, it's starting to happen and they're starting to feel the pressure, but there's a new day coming where that's going to be all over, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay.
And, you know, the other thing I wanted to say, and I'm going to go a little off the subject, but the other guy was talking about he's verifying his birth certificate and all this stuff. And look, I don't say that you shouldn't do that or that you should do that. I mean, look, I tried to get out of the Social Security system years ago. I didn't even get my kids' Social Security cards. I was there 30 years ago, trying to get out of this system because I knew it was no good. But when you go through that process of verifying it and going and jumping through all their hoops and filing your UCC and all that stuff, it's only as good as the nation is. We had two examples recently of diplomats. Now, when you go through that process, basically you become like a diplomat, where it says, do not stop, do not detain, because as a American citizen person, you know, under the Constitution, technically they should not stop and detain you for no reason, right? Well,
right, of course.
We had that lady diplomat. They strip searched her at the airport. I don't know if you remember this. She was, I forget from what country, and they held her for hours. They're making examples out of diplomats, because that's sending a message to us that nothing's sacrosanct, nobody's safe. Look at this whole business of being a private person and everything. It's only as good as long as the Constitution's in effect, because basically what you're doing is you're cementing your unalienable rights, and they put you in a computer, and you have some kind of an ID, some kind of a number. When they pull you over, it comes up and says, leave them alone. Now, the cop doesn't know why you have that. It's none of his business, but they're all instructed about that. However, they're also violating that now, and that goes to show how far down the path we are. When this country goes down, there's no such thing as rights. That's what
of
they
course.
Want to kill. There's nothing. So no matter what magic you can do, and I'm not even saying, you know, look, if it was up to me, I would participate in any of their schemes. But if we don't save this country, that's going to be a non-issue. You know what I mean? I mean, there's people that have this status that end up going to jail for one reason or another. And it's not really a get out of jail free card, because if you're speeding and they go to pull you over and you don't stop, I don't care if you're a diplomat, I don't care if you don't have a voter's registration, I don't care if President Obama stamped your thing and said, this is my buddy, leave alone. You know what they're going to do? They're going to grab you and they're going to throw you in jail. And if it's a get out of jail free from Obama, guess what? You ain't getting out till he comes down and gets you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fact. So, you know, look at, and especially if there's an injured party, they're absolutely right, right? So I just want to put that in perspective to where we are. And you know it because you're in the courts And you see how they are. They just steamroll. It's up to the people to bring them back to where they need to be.
Right. And I want to know...
29 minutes.
Okay.
Just ending up that Lydia has said on many occasions that the marshals in this area in New Jersey and New York are fearful of me. And it's ironic that I'm fearful. I'm a U.S. Marine era vet and a librarian. That's a very dangerous combination. Why is that? Because as a bulldog, the mission is key. And as a librarian, I want the proof. Oh, I give you the proof of your answer. And the real thing that is so confounding is how much they live the lie, the fiction, and the abuse that we people receive. It's going to be a nice day to see strange fruit hanging when they have the opportunity to step down and remove themselves. And I don't believe in suicide, but they are committing their own genocide.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. We'll move on. And don't be surprised if I drop your name and when I get pulled over in New York City, I'm going to tell them, you can't bother me. I'm friends with Jason. But anyway, New York Walt, you've been unmuted. New York Walt, are you there? I don't hear you. You got to unmute yourself. I mean, you're unmuted on here. Maybe your mic is muted. Going once, going twice. All right, I'm going to move to Donald Brown. I'll leave Walt unmuted for the time being. Go ahead, Donald Brown, you're unmuted.
Okay, thank you.
Cool.
I had a question. Here in Allegheny County, we have hundreds of people being detained in the county jail without a conviction. What can I do?
It's a horrible problem, and it should never happen, but it's happening all over. Look, they don't, not only without a conviction, how about without an indictment even? Have they even been indicted is the question, you know? I don't know what you can do, you know, on a person-by-person basis. Like John says, you fill out habeas corpus. There's a whole procedure you can go through. But really, what you're doing is you're going into the jungle with a machete, and you're slashing, and you're cutting, and you're making a path. And it ain't very easy, let me tell you why. And you know, if you make a big pain in the neck out of yourself, sometimes you can have success. But, you know, the other thing is if you get somebody that really wants to get rid of you and he's really ticked off, he'll figure out a way to get you thrown in jail, you know? You have to be careful. You know, all these jails, you know, we get into power, we're going to have to go through all of those people that have no charges, no indictments, no convictions. They're going to have to be released. You know, I mean, look, I have a very hard time believing that anybody sitting in that jail that has committed a violent crime or a truly heinous crime, that they haven't followed the procedure to put them in there. If somebody's sitting in there with no charges and no indictment or something, I'll tell you why it is. It's because the whole arrest is fugazi, and they're not willing to commit. Somebody's hedging, and there's nobody to answer to, so they let them sit there. And the reason they let them sit there is they get paid. They get paid through their CESCQ account, and so they're billing every month. I just heard about this guy. I have somebody that's in the system, and he said this guy got this paperwork in, and he said, "Holy mackerel! I was supposed to be released a year ago."
My goodness!
He had release papers that came in a year ago, and he's sitting in a state prison. And because of why? Now I don't say that they were targeting him or anything. I think that they're so incompetent and there's so much stuff going on, and the guys at the very top are making so much money, nobody's managing it. They can't even manage their own crook system well. I mean, look at now, they took that guy. He found out that he was a year overtime that he was supposed to be. Well, they didn't make money on him, because I'd like to get a hold of him and file a lawsuit with him, because guess what? He's got a lot of money coming to him if he takes them to court. as should be. So, you know, when they do stupid stuff like that, I mean, maybe his original charge wasn't even good. Like you said, he needed to be gotten out. But for them to leave him in there a year longer than he should have been, listen, he should be able to make so much money that it negates anything they made on his SESQ account. So I don't know what to tell you up front. What I can tell you is, you know, we have to get moving with our filings and stuff. The more they feel us coming, and they're going to start it, I don't know at what point it'll get down to the prison system level, but it will. The judges will start feeling it, and the officers that have been there, they're going to realize that they have to answer for this stuff. And when is that going to happen? Well, I think it's probably maybe closer than you think it is.
Well, the second question is, thank you for that answer, but I did, before I bring this other point up, I did call the State Civil Rights Division and asked them to inquire in this, since it was private knowledge. It was advertised on the front page of one of the local newspapers here, the New Pittsburgh Courier, that this was done. But that's just circulated here within the county, I believe. And so I haven't gotten a reply from them to look into the matter. It's just heinous. Now, the other question is, when did we lose footings? I mean, when did the common law court lose its footing or form? I don't know how to.
1789.
Yeah.
When?
1789.
Right away they started chipping at it immediately.
The Judiciary Act of 1789, the ink on the Constitution wasn't even dry yet, and that was the first assault on the Constitution. And they, right then is when they established the Chancery Rules of Chancery Court in our court system, which is, you know, that was repugnant to our founding fathers. They talked a little bit about this in the anti-federalist papers, and chancery was not part of our court system, and the equity system was to operate under the rules of common law, not the rules of chancery. So George Washington wasn't even in office 6 months or a year, and they've already were assaulting our Constitution. And this was really cemented in a big way, because remember, chancery courts were active in the United States before the Constitution came into being. So some of them never just continued in many places. This was really cemented in the Organic Act of 1871, I think it was the Organic Act, and that is when they created the federal city had already been created. They created a municipality in Washington, D.C., and in that municipality, a city within a city, they set up a country onto its own called Washington, D.C. It's in the District of Columbia, and they took control of that city. And they took control, of course, our government. Ultimately, it's been hijacked since then. There's an oligarchy there that controls the administrative office, and has been so doing so for the longest time. Of course, little by little, they've taken over our judiciary and our legislative branches, and they're working, of course, through all states. It's a conspiracy. You know, we've been invaded, and Congress is doing nothing.
Hey John, I just want to make the fact known to Donald that you've got papers written on all this stuff on the site. If he wants to know,
yeah,
you've got papers on exactly what you just said is in the site. I don't know where in particular the federal city. I know that's one that I've read.
Well, remember some of this stuff, you know, in writing that we haven't really put out there, but to some degree we have put that stuff out, but we have strong language stuff that we haven't really stuck out there yet. But yeah, if anybody goes to the media page, read everything on that media page, download everything, because that's where we're really piling in. Not only the papers that we're filing, but the important papers to understand the principles, the, you know, jurisdiction, and understanding all the building blocks of what we're doing.
Well, everything that you said, I think you have papers on.
Yeah, we do.
Tonight.
We do.
So I just want to tell you that. I'm going to move to the next question because it's getting late. I got Rick foaming at the mouth. He's got something he really wants to give us. And I'd like to get down to a couple of the other people down there, too. I see Gary's waiting. But anyway, I'm going to go to Rick. Speak the truth. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
When John was talking about how much money it costs to do what you guys are trying to do, and we know how much money it costs us to keep the radio station afloat and to do this full time.
Amen.
Annie had said to me, you know, she started buying a lottery ticket every week, and she said, you know, if I was one of these people who won $50 million, I'd gladly give $2 million to NLA, because the way things are going, the economy is going to collapse, and without freedom, my money's not worth anything.
That's right.
And it triggered something in my... Right. When she said that, it triggered something in my head. And this is what I would like to share, and I would like to even write up a brief, and you guys could fine-tune it, maybe put it on the site, maybe I'll put it on ours also. And here's what I'd like to throw out at everybody. The average guy who works his butt off and buys a lottery ticket, okay, and he wins $20 million, $50 million, $100 million or something, right? If being you guys got people in 50 states, in all the states, okay, every single week somebody's winning big money like that. And if those people were contacted and they were told, maybe they're not awake. If I wasn't awake and I just won $50 million, and someone gave me a link to Shake and Wake Radio and National Liberty Alliance and said, check this out, we need your help, because you're about to be reduced to zero again very shortly, and God blessed you, so why don't you bless your freedom and give back? If I won $50 million, and I've been broke all my life, and I want my freedom and to be able to give it to my children or whatever, and to continue on, to throw $1 million at Shake and Wake Radio or all these networks or NLA, I would definitely, even if I wasn't awake, if somebody just sent me a short letter, two paragraphs, God blessed you, now it's time you wake up and take a look at this, and these people need your help. Think about this. Every single week, there is a Powerball winner in every single state or tri-state area. If you could only get, if you or we could only get just a couple of people, just a couple of people who are like, thank you, Jesus, thank you, Lord, thank you for blessing me, and to go and look at what we're about, realize the dire situation we're in, and that the economy is about to collapse. Their money is going to be worth nothing shortly unless we can turn this around. If I had $50 million, I'd easily give several $1 million to both Shake and Wake Radio and NLA and all of the networks. And I'll tell you what, if anybody ever donates a couple million to Shake and Wake Radio, I'll give every single network that's supporting John $100,000, you know what I mean, to keep going. So what my idea was is, listen, everybody out there, and I'm going to put this on the website and write up a brief, and I think you should put it on NLA, to notice to all lottery winners, with a brief passage that you've been blessed, bless us, help us so that you can keep what you've won. And I mean, when this idea hit me, I was on fire talking to you, and I am. You know what? We don't have to get every single, put it this way. Like I said, there's 50 states and several lotteries going on every single week. If we could only get 5 people in the next 2 months to throw a couple $1 million at us for freedom. That
okay.
Allow you guys to do everything you need to do.
Let's go get them. Let's go get them.
What do you think? You like the idea?
It's good. I don't
because
know how you're going to get to them all.
Here's the deal. If you've been broke all your life and you just won $50 million, the last thing you want to hear is that the people who run the bank and the country are going to reduce you to zero shortly again. So I think it's I think it would be a good investment, and I think a lot of people would be grateful to God because they've been blessed, and they might look into NLA, Shake and Wake, and the other networks, and they might become generous and figure, you know what, God blessed me, so I'm going to bless these people and in the name of freedom. And I just, you know, it was the first time that that ever popped into my head, and with the Powerball every week, I think what all the members of NLA and everyone in the freedom movement who listens to Shake and Wake and NLA, when you hear somebody in your area won, you know, they usually broadcast who they were, what their name is, where they worked. Contact them. Send them an email. If there's an address, send them some information about NLA, Shake and Wake Radio.
Well, all I want is I don't want to beat it to death. It's a good idea, except for one thing. You got to be there real quick because the minute somebody wins, and I know this for a fact because I have personal experience.
Yeah, they come out of the right.
The ambulance stations. It's like forget about.
So you might want to wait a few weeks.
Well, or you want to be, or you want to be the first one there, one or the other.
Yeah, either be the first
one
there. Look
at the accountants come out and the lawyers come out.
Wait a few weeks. Right. Or wait a few weeks till the initial onslaught of all their friends and everybody begging.
Right, right.
But what I'm saying is, hey, you know, I just won $50 million. I'm not awake to nothing. I never heard of Shake and Wake Radio or NLA. And all of a sudden, I get a few links and a person with a passionate short couple statements, couple paragraphs. Check these people out. The economy is about to collapse. We need to take our country back. You've been blessed. You know, I really think if we can only get a few people like that involved, then all of us could have all the money that we need to continue on big time. And that's just an idea to toss out there.
Okay.
Because you know what? The average guy really doesn't have the ability to reach in his pocket and send you a grand, you know. But somebody who just won a whole boatload of money, man, they're blessed that, you know, they're willing maybe to say, hey, I was blessed, so I'm going to follow me.
All you need is one victory. You know,
right.
Look, I, the other thing is, you know, we also do the, you know, people got rich on bubblegum, a penny a piece bubblegum. So it works both ways. If everybody reaches in their pocket,
it does work both ways. And the little donations help. But what I'm saying is if we put that out to 100 people over the next 6 months and five of them donate $2 million,
you're
golden.
I'll tell you what.
You know?
I think you should try it. I think people should try it. We'll see what happens. If it happens,
we'll get a big
fat kiss. Okay. See you later.
All right. I love you, man. I love John. Everything you guys are doing, you know, God bless. God bless
you.
We've got to take it back lawfully because we really don't want to go into revolution.
Right.
God
right.
bless.
Yeah, you too. Okay, next caller, 25682. You're unmuted.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, this is Ray. Ray Chell in Arizona.
Yes, Ray. Got a little echo there. Go ahead.
Well, I'm on my cell phone. Say, I come in a little bit late, and I heard you talking about bailing out books and things. Are those copyrighted books? Are they regular books, or are they?
Well, they're something that we've produced.
Well, they are copywritten now. We have a, what do you call it, number, an SBN number? We have an SBN number. They're our books. We authored them.
They're your books.
Yeah.
Why don't you convert them to e-books and and send them out as ebooks, and then
it's available. It's available as ebooks also. When people go out to the website, they click on it and they go to it. They can download it right there in PDF, and they can print it out numerous ways. They have to have a little bit of experience on how to print, but they can print it out numerous ways. But if they want to buy the booklets in quantity, because we sell them by hundreds. At 68 cents a piece, it's like $68, which includes, shipping and handling.
Okay.
So you can download them. It's a good thing. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing like having that little book in your hand. I mean, I do a lot of e-books. I do a lot of stuff online. But it's very nice to have the book with you in the car or different places. I prefer it.
And if you're in court, that's the two books you want in your pocket. One is the common law handbook, and the other one is the Constitution handbook. Those are the two books you want. In those two books, you can battle any court case. That's your ammo right there.
Okay. Well, I was just hearing, and I thought I'd ask about that. So I appreciate your comment. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. We're going to move on to Ronald from Oregon. You know, I want to just say something about courts with no electronic equipment. Look at how many people have laptops that, if I'm in court, I'm going to make sure that they let me take my laptop in, because that's where all my stuff are. I mean, do the attorneys come in with laptops? Anyway, that's something to think about. Anyway, Oregon Ronald, I'll be quiet. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hallelujah. I just want to pass along a little commentary that I picked up here from the radio, and, gosh, I'm sure glad Rick made his message there. He didn't have to repeat so many things, or repeat himself so many times. But anyway, I was sitting here last night listening to OPB from the Portland metropolitan area in the country of Oregon here, between 8 and 8:30 OPB. And they were interviewing an attorney, a member of the bar, and I really can't say exact because I've already forgotten, but maybe if I recall it all, it was in Virginia. But the man, an Esquire, bar member of Virginia, will say, and been wearing the robe for about 17 years. And the topic just happened to have been the grand jury. It was about a 15 to 20 minute interview with him. And very interesting what he had to say. And it sounded like it was coming directly from the bar. He spoke of actually how ignorant most jurors are today. And he said when he started 17 years ago, he said there wasn't near the amount of written regulation for the jurors to read through before they're actually picked as there is today. And then he made mention, if my memory helps, particular high publicity type cases, high profile type cases, murders and whatnot. He said oftentimes they'll go through about 183 people before they come up with their 12. So that was on OPB, and that's nationally broadcasted throughout this country.
The reason why they go through so many people is, first of all, people really try to get out of it. Second of all, there are certain people they don't want sitting on a jury. And so once they start asking the questions, you see, now they're tampering with the jury because they're trying to figure out the outcome, and that's what it's all about. That can't be. On a common law grand jury, you pick them out of a pool, and that's what you get. There's no second choice. Now, look, you ask the people if they have anything connected to the case, and they should, of course, say, well, yeah, I kind of know Joe through Frank, and, that person's got to go. Or, if someone realizes that someone's that's on the jury that's prejudiced in a certain way or something, then, of course, they got to go. But other than that, you can't tamper with that jury. You can't talk to them about jury nullification, that they can't do that to begin with, and to hide things from them. There was someone who called me recently who went in to go on a jury, and he said, I wanted to get in there, but he started talking about jury nullification. They couldn't get him out quick enough, okay? They do not want anyone in there with jury nullification because the game is no longer fixed. They want to win every game, and they almost do.
Well, maybe someone could call on behalf of the NLA to OPB and see if they couldn't get a 2 or 3 minute segment in relation to the grand jury from the common law point of view. And then
yeah, if someone wants to call them up, that'd be good, you know, and tell them about us. You know, we don't go out and chase anything down, but people who are listening to us, and, you know, we are streamed by numerous other radio programs, but we didn't go out to solicit them. But they were brought to us by, you know, our listeners and participants with what we're doing, approaching these people and then bringing them to us. So a couple of them heard about us and interviewed us and then wanted to, you know, broadcast us all the time. So, you know, well, we're good with that.
It could be interesting to know if the attention that you're creating or, the wave that you're creating or part of creating, helping to create this, you know, provoking these little radio interviews like that.
Anyway, I can. We got 3 minutes left, so we got.
How many people are on this call tonight?
Well, we usually get right now we have 99 people, but we usually get throughout the night sometimes up to almost 400, 350, 320.
Yeah, people come and people go.
380, 390. You know.
Anyway, I want to move to Gary from Michigan. I'm sorry to cut you off, but he's been down there a long time. Let me just see what he's got to say. And
that number is just what comes in through our board. People listening from other ways, and then of course we're streaming from 4 radio programs. So
right.
We got quite a few people listening. We don't know what the numbers really are.
And then people come in and listen to the archives too, so it gets repeated. So
that's the other thing. I know when we were doing this off of I forget the name of it. I think it was Blog Talk Show. Yes, Talk Show. Yeah, on there they had the statistics that whenever anybody downloaded it, made a count, and we would get if we had 200 people. People come into the meeting, we would get 50% or more, 100, 120 downloads.
Right.
And so that was really good. Now, so we really don't know how many people are really hearing this message, but it's not, I don't think it's really too far-fetched to say between the downloads, the coming in off the streams, and also what we have in the actual, on our board, I don't think it's too far to say that we're probably about 1,000 or close to it. When you include the downloads.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Anyway, we only got a minute or two, so go ahead.
Thank you, Gary. I'm going to go to the next wireless and see what he's got to say. There's no
Hello,
name.
Hello, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
John?
He's listening. You got 30.
Yeah,
go ahead. You got about
okay,
59
seconds. I sent you a self-addressed stamped envelope for the writ of mandamus. I need to ask you one question. What you don't have included in there any instructions if the sheriff chooses felony rescue to the U.S. Marshals?
I don't understand what you're saying. You sent the self-addressed.
The mandamus. I sent you a self-addressed stamped envelope for it to send me the stamped and sealed writ of mandamus.
Okay.
And but I have one question on the writ of mandamus. It does not have any instructions for the U.S. Marshals to do what to do if the sheriff chooses felony rescue.
Right. We have a paper coming out that deals with the marshals. It's up there. You can see it. We have released it. It's up on our media page. We have not filed it yet because we're waiting to get all of the necessary addresses and everything that we're going to work on to get out because we're doing email, we're doing faxes, and we're doing hard copy. And so as soon as we get that out, we'll file them. But you can download it, go up to media, and click on Sheriffs and Marshals. I think we named it, let me see, what was it, just Marshals or Sheriffs? I mean, just Sheriffs, or did we include the Marshals on the label? I don't remember.
Well, I'm asking, can it be on the writ of mandamus? What the duty of the sheriff, because it has orders there.
Yes, it does.
To,
we have a mandamus to the sheriff, and in that paper we added the marshal. The marshal
yes,
is identical to the sheriff. Our research has told us that the marshal is as powerful as the sheriff is on a federal level, and
well,
he has the same duty.
When the sheriff chooses felony rescue, what is the duty of the marshals?
Well, there
that's
you go.
Just not
well,
included.
when the sheriff chooses felony rescue, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, when the person has been, named in the affidavit has committed a crime, has been verified, and then the sheriff declines to arrest that person, that's felony rescue.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, then he's guilty. Then you're saying, of course, look at right now, every sheriff in the nation is holding people that have not been indicted, and he doesn't know the Constitution, so he continues to hold them, and he's in violation of his oath. He could go to jail. He's committing a felony. Okay.
That's what I'm saying. That's what needs to be stipulated in the writ of mandamus for
the
U.S. Marshal.
We are doing this in a very gentle way, and we do make this point. If you go read the papers, you'll see it's made in the papers. And we are being gentle with them because they're as ignorant as we are. The day will come when they're going to have to straighten up and fly right or leave, because we're going to put them in jail at some point. But again, I think when we get to that some point, all the sheriffs and the marshals will be obedient to the law, because they'll know it then, and they'll understand it. I'm hoping that we're going to reach that point. And again, that's the goal, National Liberty Alliance. The key to success is education. We have to not only educate ourselves and our children and as many people as we can. More important than any other than that is, of course, the sheriff and the marshal. They're first and foremost. After that, all the other people, all the other oath takers need to be instructed in the common law and the process of our judiciary. But it's going to take some time. So we're working on that. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, like I said, I sent you the envelope. I'm waiting for you to send it back to me because I understand it. Okay.
Yeah, I've got my desk. I got a little desk in here just full of stuff that I got to go through. I just haven't been able to for almost a week. It's just
well, you know, I've already won the case because of res judicata and collateral estoppel applies, because the case has already been previously adjudicated at Dachau, and they're the same ones. They're convicted war criminals.
All right, well, I hate to cut you off, but we've come to the end of our program, so we're going to shut things down
now.
Well,
you understand.
What's that? I didn't get him, so we lost him. All right, well, anyway, maybe we'll talk again next week. I'll look for your letter. Anyway, meanwhile, thanks to everybody for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Saturday. We're going to close out with an Alan Parsons Project song. I'm looking for it now. Up there it goes. Okay. And we'll see you next Monday, Good night.
close.